Hello, Seattle. This is Dr. Crazier Frame, and I'm listening to Smartass's Radio with Johnny Video and Geek Goddess Jackie.
Oh, for the love of God, my internet cut out. Roz!
Holy podcast, Batman!
Right you are, Robin. To the Batcave! We've got to listen to Smartass's Radio. Hurry, chump!
Smart Asses Radio. Hot chicks, geek culture, and unbridled smartassery.
This is madness! This is Smartasses!
Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com.
Hey, Homer.
Hey, Mo.
Hey, Krusty, Bonnie, Sideshow Bob. What are you guys doing over there?
We're listening to Smartasses Radio.
Yep. Sure are funny.
I beg to differ. I find their sophomoric humor to be anemic at best.
Don't put a sock in it.
Yeah, well, we'll put a stick up your butt.
To become a smartassaholic, check out our online magazine at smartasses.net for replays of our radio show's audio humor, pay-per-view predictions, the Smartasses Hot Chick of the Month, and official Smartasses paraphernalia, as well as entertainment articles, videos, celebrity news, free sarcastic e-cards, geek culture, and one of the four largest annual top 100 sexiest women lists in the world.
Hey, Smartasses, it's the governor over here. When I'm not filming my movies or porking the maid, I'm sure as hell not putting my ear to the computer and listening to your show. Fuck you. And that horse you put the saddle on. I won't be back. Fuck all of you.
To interact with Smartasses Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the host at SmartassesNet using the hashtag HailJackie.
Hello, Twonks. Good morning, good evening. How do you do? How do you be? Whether you're one of our good friends just waking up in China or just going to bed here in the Western Hemisphere, well, actually not going to bed. That's stupid. Or just getting home from work here in the Western Hemisphere. It'd be really silly if you were going to bed right now unless you're like, you know, a midnight shift guy. Either way, I am your host, not Mr. Rourke, but Johnny Hollywood Video. And welcome to Smartasses Radio. Sorry, you got to forgive me. I'm a little bit preoccupied with people. I hate people. People. I tell them, don't do this for this reason, and then they do it anyway. Hey, man, what does this cost? It says right there what it costs. Like, if people would just learn to read, they would find the answers to their questions without having to ask them and make me type everything out all over again. So if you've seen me post on Facebook or whatnot of why I hate people, now you have an idea of why I hate people. Somebody's just trying to order a commercial for this show. Oh, Oh, I didn't know you needed to preview the commercial. That's much too complicated. I'm going to cancel the order. Well, cancellations have a very negative effect on our ability to continue selling. So if they would have just read the instructions in the first place, they would have seen not to place the order without contacting. Oh, that's too confusing. I don't know of any radio show that just says, sure, we'll play your commercial. Absolutely. Just send it over. We don't need to preview it or listen to it. Just send it over. Not a big deal. Oh, you want to talk about raping and pillaging? Sure, we'll support that. We'll put it on the air for you. Absolutely. People, I hate people. So now you know why it's called Smartasses. Anyway, what else is going on in the world? Speaking of things that you might or might not see from me on Facebook, if you've been following myself and or Smartasses, you've probably noticed some of the videos we've been posting about the hot chicky babes of the Chinese military. Now, aside of Smartasses magazine just being very Asian friendly, especially considering that our annual yearly top 100 sexiest women alive list was over 25% Asian last year, you might be wondering to yourself, hey Johnny Video, what's with all the videos of the Chinese female military? Well, I'm going to answer that question for you right now. If you've been keeping up with this whole Obama thing, you know, he is the 44th president of the United States. If you've been keeping up with this whole Obama thing, then you are well aware that the government of the United States of America is in for well over $1.3 trillion in debt to China, which, well, let's face it, China itself is getting along just fine. They're making their little plastic things, printing made in China on the bottom of it, and then just going about their day. So, you know, they're getting along just fine. But with me being a see the writing on the wall kind of guy, that's an indicator to me. $1.3 trillion in debt is an indicator to me that there's probably going to be a Chinese flag flying over the White House sometime in the near future. And I, for one, especially after seeing the Chinese military babes that will be policing our streets and making sure guys like me stay in line, I, for one, welcome our eventual Chinese overlordesses with wide open arms. I mean, did you see the videos? Not only are they marching while adorned in smartasses pink military outfits. By the way, I need to call Crayola about making smartasses pink an official color. Not only are they ensconced in smartasses pink, more commonly known as magenta, they are also wearing white go-go boots, not unlike the Miami Dolphins cheerleaders. Folks, it doesn't get any better than that. And again, I, for one, welcome our eventual Chinese overlordesses to come and conquer with wide open arms whenever they're ready. And speaking of the Asian women of the Smartasses Top 100 Sexiest Women Alive list, have you seen that FHM came out with their 2014 Top 100 Sexiest Women Philippines version? And I enunciate Philippines for a reason, because I'm going to explain. I have two problems with this. First and foremost, they completely misrepresented themselves on the cover of this special issue, because the graphic says that it is their Top 100 Sexiest Women in the World, when it's really just the Philippines. FHM does have an in-the-world list, so why they would try to pawn off their Philippines-only issue as the world is beyond me. Secondly, our 2014 number 5 sexiest woman alive, Elodia Gosungfio, was number 14 on their Philippines-only list, but she thinks, because of their erroneous magazine cover, that she's number 14 on their list in the world. So you might be asking yourself why I have a problem with this. Surely, of course, we're happy that FHM is on top of their game and including her at all. We appreciate that. However, FHM has been around longer than us, so if she really were number 14 in the world, as opposed to just the Philippines, for FHM, that would be a little bit of a bigger deal than being number 5 on our list. Are you following me now? Being number 14 in just the Philippines is actually kind of insulting, seeing as how we named slash voted her number 5 in the world. Yet all we got out of the deal from her was a favorited tweet, which, as you know by now from our weekly public service announcements, means nothing. But now that she thinks she is number 14 in the world for FHM, well, she's posting about it all over Twitter, Facebook, and God only knows what other social media sites, which is a bit like shoving us under the rug. Now, am I saying she shouldn't be proud? Of course not. Am I saying she's ungrateful? Of course not. But come on. Being number 14 in just a tiny little country is nowhere near as good as being number 5 on the entire planet. We just want some props is all. That's really all it amounts to. Elodia, give us the props. So anyway, it's great to be back with you live after taking a month off, and now that we are... Well, I, Jenny Video, want to know what's on your mind. Are you excited for the MLB All-Star Game? Do you have LeBron fever? Do you also welcome our new Chinese overlordesses? Would you like to give Elodia a piece of your mind? If there's something you'd like to talk about, the chat room is open, or you can always send us a tweet at smartasses.net, using the hashtag HailJackie. And just to continue spreading the word on exactly how Twitter does work, folks, remember, if a retweet is the equivalent of a LeBron James slam dunk, favoriting a tweet doesn't even amount to jumping over a crack in the sidewalk with a ping pong ball in your hand. It's not a like button, folks, and as you know, that is your week in and week out public service announcement here at Smartasses Radio. Now you know. Anyway, with that said, we do want you to definitely stay tuned to smartmarkradio.com after this show is over and listen to yesterday's episode of Pro Wrestling Weekend when Rick, Jared, and Frankie Antolini discussed everything from the world of professional wrestling. Man, what a show it was. And then, of course, this Wednesday, make sure to catch the SMR hip-hop stop with the Lyrical Miracle R.I.C., Rizky Biz, and Hill Jack. This Wednesday, it's the replay of their interview with Reverie, who has also been on this show, so check that out. If you want to, just go to smartmarkradio.com, use the little search feature at the top, type in Reverie, R-E-V-E-R-I-E, and you can listen to her past show, you can listen to her show on Wednesday, you can listen to when she was on this show, all the above. And then on Thursdays, you can also catch the SMR version of Paranormal Conspiracy Theory Radio when your hosts, Chris Ames, Bob Cooper, and Johnny Watt go beyond the truth. And I have to say that like George Norrie. I want to buy gold and solar-powered sea crane radios. About all I can say in George Norrie's voice. And then this Friday, for the more mature members of our audience, always, as always, every Friday night, you can listen to Hit List Radio with your host, Tony the Hitman T. And of course, next week, right here on Smartasses Radio, we have modern-day composer Thomas Schoenberger, plus the lead singer of the band Oblivia, Ben Kyle. So with that said, forget the hometown hoochies, folks. I strongly encourage you to go to smartasses.net and check out our July 2014 Hot Chick of the Month, Miss Heather Taddy, from the old A&E sci-fi show Paranormal State. And just for the record, we also have a great article on her in our entertainment column called 15 More Minutes, so you'll want to check that out as well. And we'd also like to remind you that if you would like to advertise on Smartasses Radio, we are heard on 3 different worldwide networks. And best of all, your ads will live forever in our wildly popular archives. If you'd like to sign up, you can advertise with us for as low as $2.50 a month. Just head over to smartasses.net and click on the advertising link at the bottom of the page for details. So let's get this prepped and ready here. I do want to tell you that we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by renowned sci-fi author David J. Williams. And in the first hour, indie wrestler and star of the Australian television series House O's, Nicole Sherrock, a.k.a. Nikki Nitro. But before we do that, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, we will have for you this week's top 12 list. So stay tuned.
작은 나무는 어느새 다 높이 자라 어느 누구도 쉽게 들어오지 못하네. 지친 하루에 내 이름은 지워버린 지 오래인데 오늘 내 꿈속에는 그대로
Ladies and gentlemen, guess what? I'm back. This is Hitlist Radio. It's going to be all adult entertainment. And a lot of people, you know what, say that I'm consumed with myself. Well, the right way we met was actually through your wife. I was hitting on her online. Matter of fact, if I have a radio show, I was a damn deal. When I look at a chick, I got to look at everything, and I have to give every part of her anatomy an award. But I am glad to be back, and I am glad that I am on show, and I am glad that Jared ain't here.
Friday nights, 10 p.m. on SmartRockRadio.com.
So, Ricky, how about that soundbite, man?
Oh, you're terrible. And your show is terrible. If it weren't for Geek Goddess Jackie, I'd have already downloaded it, put it on a floppy, just so I could wipe my ass with it.
Well, that's really...
Oh, what? You hear that noise? That's you. You just told a joke. What's that? What's that? Is that applause? No. Oh, is that laughter? No, that's a pin dropping. Your audience hates you.
I hate you. That's not really...
You are not smart. You're stupid asses. You should be called stupid asses. Well, you're leaving. Rude.
Hey, player, is you tired of blinging your gear, flashing your squiller, and cruising around for dimes in your whip with no bass? Don't hate the player, my nickels. Hate the game.
I'm loving how it's going in the Akron scene, cause I'm rolling with the dudes and they act as mean. Always come around here and they asking me. I cause catastrophes the way it has to be. This is Tony Sin, man, yeah, and this is Soundstrom. West on the beach, yo, it's like we bringing sound, dude. I ain't never slowing down, it's not loud, dude. Haters in the dark trying to hide. Down. So you wanna hear the bomb stuff? Sick of the videos. Middle finger up and stay rapping for my city, yo. Due to the hip-hop style, it's the bomb. Ain't you heard? SmartMarkRadio.com. So you wanna hear the bomb stuff? Sick of the videos. Middle finger up and stay rapping for my city, yo. Due to the hip-hop style, it's the bomb. Ain't you heard? SmartMarkRadio.com.
Wednesday nights at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on SmartMarkRadio.com.
I always know I can count on you, mighty Hercules.
You only had one sandal, Jason, which means you were meant to be king of Ulysses. Why are you laughing?
Hercules! Oh, it's most amusing. Argo said he wanted to pass the time by having a drink while we sail on our quest to find the Golden Fleece. Hmm?
And what's so funny about that?
Well, it's comical, Hercules, because he got drunk on his own wine and passed out. So Castor and Pollux and myself put his hand in hot water so that he would pee himself. Then we all found writing utensils and drew on his face.
By the gods, listen now. Remember what I'm going to say. Never draw on the host.
But Hercules, I don't understand. I thought when someone passed out at their own party, they were considered fair game, hmm?
And who bought you that glass of wine you hold in your hand?
I'm sorry, mighty Hercules. You are right.
Well done, lad. Now you'll grow up to be fine and strong.
I just hope I'm as wise as you are one day, Hercules.
And you will be, my boy, because you have a strong will.
Thanks, Hercules. And right now, I'm going to do what Laertes said we should do all along. And that's blow pepper up his nose and glue a banana to his hand so maybe he won't notice that he pissed himself. See ya.
Bye then.
You know what they say, Hercules. Spare the rod, spoil the child.
He's 35.
Captain, I'm picking up a strange noise from the 21st century.
Oh, do shut up, Mr. Crusher.
Shields up. Red alert.
Relay that, Will. Wesley, it's very hard to take you seriously when you are wearing that wimpy little rainbow suit.
Sorry.
Captain, the boy is right. I'm picking up the Smartass's radio podcast. Oh, good lord. On screen, then. Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com. Smart Asses Radio. Talk to the hosts. Dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype. Smartasses Radio.
And welcome back, folks. And if you're wondering if during the commercial break if my opinion of people changed, it has not. I still hate people. So there you go. Anyway, welcome back, folks. As you know, on Friday morning, NBA star LeBron James announced that he was re-signing with the Cleveland Cavaliers, which was kind of a big deal here in Northeast Ohio, and therefore returning to where he grew up, which is here in Northeast Ohio. On the heels of that news, the people at our home office in Boondock, Montana, that would be where our home office is located, our phony home office is located. On the heels of that news, the people at our home office in Boondock, Montana, put their collective ears to the ground and scoured social media, which of course means that now we bring you the top 12 things overheard after LeBron James announced his return to Cleveland. So, boy, this is going to be a lot of fun. All right, here we go. Let's do another. Let me get a couple things out of the way here. Don't you just love listening to me when I'm just all disorganized like this? I'm a little out of touch because I've been gone for a month. Okay, here we go. Let's do another drum roll. The top 12 things. Top 12 things ever heard after LeBron James announced his return to Cleveland. Number 12, I never knew America Airlines Arena had such a great echo. There you go with that. Number 11, with LeBron going back to Cleveland, I wonder if Chris Bosh will go back to Jurassic Park. Well, that would make a lot of sense. Number 10, I thought he was leaving to play baseball for the White Sox. No, I think that was... I think stupid phony laugh button's going to hit, so here we go. I think that was Michael Jordan. Number 9, does that mean we have to change the cover of our King James Bible from black to wine and gold? I don't think you need to do that. Number 8, top news, Republicans move convention out of Cleveland after hearing big black man is coming to town. No. Number 7, super excited to go to a Cavs game just so I can watch LeBron put on a New York Yankees cap when it's over. Number 6, I think I just saw Dwayne Wade outside LeBron's bedroom wearing a trench coat and holding a boombox. I think that was John Cusack and Say Anything. I think they got that a little bit mixed up. Number 5, maybe now Johnny Manziel will stop hanging around with Justin Bieber. No. Gosh darn it. Number 4, do you think we should play Skylar Grey's Coming Home song 11,000 times or go for 12? I think they've already crossed that border. Number 3, boy, there sure is a lot of traffic on I-95 North today. That makes a lot of sense. Number 2, just Google how to unburn a jersey. And, of course, the number 1 thing overheard after LeBron James announced his return to Cleveland, hey, that's great, let's set Lake Erie on fire again to celebrate. And there you have your top 12 things overheard after LeBron James announced his return to Cleveland. So, all right, folks, on that note, please stay tuned. We'll take our second time out here, and hopefully we're going to get Nikki Nitro on the line. I know her dog passed away. She's all the way over in Australia where it's actually 9:30 in the morning over there right now. I'm hoping that she didn't have a rough night sleeping and overslept, any of the above, all of the above. You can do the math on all the things that could have possibly gone wrong. But I'm going to take a 10-minute commercial break here to try and get her on the line. And then hopefully everything works out. If not, we'll figure something out. But indie wrestler Nikki Nitro, star of the Aussie television series Housos. So stay tuned. We'll be right back, hopefully with her.
Did you know you can advertise on SmartSS Radio for as low as $2.50 a month? Visit SmartSS.net or SmartMarkRadio.com and click on the advertising link at the bottom of the page. Want to catch all of SmartMark Radio on your Android? Go to SmartMarkRadio.com and download our Android app for only $2.99. Want to keep up with SmartSS Radio? Subscribe to our RSS feed on SmartMarkRadio.com.
You want to find someone who you connect with, don't you? Find them now with Voxy.com. We are one of the fastest growing relationship websites in the world. With Voxy.com, you can find your next date, find your soulmate, or find your new best friend. Our members have reported finding a better matchup using Voxy than any of our so-called competitors. Find out what you've been missing. It's free to sign up, and who knows, your next relationship could be just around the bend with Voxy.com. That's VOXXII.com.
Hey, it's your boy Wes from the GF6 Show, reminding you to check us out right here on the Gag Order Network every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us for insane skits, interviews, prank calls, killer music, comedy, and way, way more. That's the GF6 Show. Blow it up.
Catch the GF6 Show every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Gag Order Radio Network or visit the show's website at gf6.com.
Hi, we are Trippa.co. That is TRIPA.co. And we are a web-based application that crawls or searches through all major flights and hospitality services just to bring you the cheapest but luxurious travel deal there is. Try us today, and we promise you that you will definitely fall in love with us. Visit www.trippa.co to take advantage of the best travel deals online.
Hypocrisy. The practice of claiming to have moral standards or beliefs to which one's own behavior does not conform. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle that's on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. It's available at www.areyouahypocrite.net. www.areyouahypocrite.net.
Thousands of random people around the world have been seeing the number 1111. Everywhere they go, multiple times in a single day. This is not just some urban legend. The 1111 phenomenon is real. Why are so many people seeing this number? 1111 Phenomena, the novel by author John Pagan, will help you unlock the mystery. Visit www.furyinthegarden.org and order your copy of 1111 Phenomena today.
ZookPatch.com, the leader in transdermal patch technology. Supplement delivery directly to the bloodstream. Check out our creatine and caffeine energy patches. ZookPatch.com. ZookPatch.com.
Call JTEC Security Services for professional security solutions. Licensed by the state of Texas. License number C12817. And we are highly insured. JTEC Security Services is comprised of ex-military and ex-law enforcement officers. We are the best in the business, and we have the portfolio to prove it. We specialize in executive protection, security details, private investigation, and asset protection. When only the best will do, call JTEC Security Services. We will consider every overseas assignment. Our portfolio includes celebrity protection details, overseas assignments, and high-profile investigations. Call 713-366-2796. Again, that number is 713-366-2796.
This message is from LoveYourBrew.com.
We all love the convenience of using a K-Cup machine, but that is no reason to settle for an okay cup of coffee. The problem is water is forced through grinds with little contact extracting weak, bitter flavor. Hello, my name is Lou Dacus, and I'm a coffee lover just like you. I've spent the last few years perfecting a better coffee brewing system. My product Calyx is a refillable single-serve brewing capsule for use with Keurig K-Cup machines. Patent-pending multi-layer brewing makes sure every bit of coffee is used and your cup is bursting with delicious, robust flavor. The difference is, by adding a layer to the drip method, the pressurized water submerges all the grinds, stripping them of their natural oil, similar to a coffee press. Purchase the Calyx multi-layer brewing system by Xera. If you're not convinced from the very first cup that it's a better way to brew and it makes a tastier mug of your favorite roast, return it for your money back. Try Calyx and you will love your brew.
Visit loveyourbrew.com and tell a friend. Xera LLC is not affiliated with Keurig Incorporated. Keurig and K-Cup are registered trademarks of Keurig Incorporated.
Hip-hop lovers coast to coast are raving about internet sensation Mello Kane and his single hustle, In My Blood, off his EP, Mama's Only Son. This hip-hop phenom who has a track with highly acclaimed Kendrick Lamar is an artist you want to know about. Make sure you check out Mello Kane and his music, available on iTunes today. You won't be disappointed. Dubstep lovers coast to coast are raving about internet sensation Convulsic and his single Love Space, available on iTunes. This electronic dance phenom who has been featured on Billboard.com in the top 10 and who's ranked number 1 in the world for dubstep on Top40Charts.com is an artist you want to know about. Make sure you check out Convulsic and his music, available on iTunes today. Indie artists can now market their music like major artists for a fraction of the cost. Introducing iTunes Exposure. iTunes Exposure is a revolutionary music marketing campaign designed to get indie artists more sales, more fans, and more buzz. No matter what genre you're in, they can help promote your music using social media, press, email, Facebook, Twitter ads, and more. Visit iTunesExposure.com to get started today.
In a world of greed, evil, and mystery, step forward Daniel Bonner, born out of dire circumstances and thrown into an uncaring world. He must now decide which side he is on. Dominic Buffery is the new king of paranormal thrillers, and The Odyssey of Daniel Bonner is rated 5 stars on Amazon. The Odyssey of Daniel Bonner by Dominic Buffery. Out now on Amazon. What would you do?
Hello, I'm George Takei. Well, I'm not battling Klingons. I'm listening to Smartass's Radio. Oh, my.
To interact with Smartass's Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the hosts at SmartassesNet using the hashtag HailJackie. Smartass's Radio. to call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype.
Are you aware of what you make me feel, baby? Right now I feel invisible to you, like I'm not radio. Then you feel me lock my arms around you. Why'd you turn away? Here's what I have to say. I was left to cry there, waiting outside there, grinning with the lost stare. That's when I
And now, back to Smartasses Radio.
Am I just some chick you place beside you? Take somebody's place. When you turn around, can you recognize my face? You used to love me, you used to hug me. But that wasn't the case. Everything wasn't okay. I was left to cry.
All right, welcome back, folks. Well, I have stalled as long as I could. I've tried writing on Facebook and on Twitter and tried Skyping, all of the above. But, again, Nikki Nitro, her dog of many, many, many years passed away within the last 12 hours. I kind of expected that there might be problems. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and play some of her comedy bits. If she goes ahead and calls in, we'll get her in. If she doesn't, then we'll just go to our second guest, David J. Williams, maybe a couple minutes early. But for right now, here's a little bit that we like to call, well, you heard it, I wanted to say a couple of weeks ago, but probably about a month ago, it was a little comedy bit that we did called the Boondock News Scoop, where Jesse Ventura calls in to talk to the news team in our home office of Boondock, Montana. Cameron Buggy and Bill Board, and then, of course, Jack Pot with the weather. So we're going to go ahead and play that for you. Give her a couple minutes. If she doesn't call in, then we'll play the, a replay of our Regis Philbin Variety Hour for you. And I got to give you a little bit of heads up. If we do get to that, it's extremely controversial, but I like to think, even though I hate people, I like to think most of our audience here at Smartasses Radio is on the intelligent side and won't read any more into it than there is. So, at any rate, here is the Boondock Action Team News Scoop.
Now, it's time for the Boondock Action Team News Scoop. Good evening, I'm Cameron Buggy, and I'm Bill Board, and this is the Boondock Montana News Scoop. Top story of the day, Maynard Livingston of Cobblepot Road invented a floating ice shanty for ice fishing in the summertime. In a related story, Mike Caboose of Springboro Lane invented the telephone today. Little did Mike know it had already been invented decades ago by Alexander Graham Bell. Mike was surprised to hear this and called his lawyer. And now we take you to our live interview with former governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, who's down at Boondock Mall promoting his new book. Jesse, it's a pleasure.
Hey, it's great to be back home.
But Jesse, you're from Minnesota. This is Montana.
Yeah, hey. A lot of people don't realize, but Montana's the land of a thousand lakes.
Yeah, hey, Jesse, no. Again, that would be Minnesota. Montana's big sky country.
Oh, hey, what do I know? I'm just the governor of Montana. Hey, you gotta hook the leg.
Jesse, do you know where you are?
Hey, you know, a lot of people don't realize I actually did three movies with Schwarzenegger. They remember Predator and Running Man, but they don't remember Batman and Robin, hey?
Yeah, right. Hey, Jesse, did you want to talk about your book at all?
Hey, you know, they used to call me Jesse the Body. Now they call me Jesse the Mind, hey?
Right, so Jesse, any plans to run for office again?
Hey, you know, Mr. Perfect, he was a wrestler like I was. He's from Montana, too. but he never did color announcing for the XFL.
Hey. Right, yeah, no, he wasn't. He was from Minnesota, like you.
Hey, Montana, Minnesota, who cares? We all make cheese better than they do in Wisconsin.
Right.
Former Governor Jesse Ventura, everyone.
Hey, it's Jesse the Mind.
Right.
Bill, back to you. Thank you, Cameron. And now here is Jackpot with the Daily Boondock Montana Action Doppler 6 Zillion Storm Team Eyewitness Weather Report.
Thank you, Bill.
Take it away, Jack.
I will.
Tell us what's in store for us, Jack.
Okay, I will.
Give it to us straight, Jack. You and your storm team.
Okay, all right. Today it's going to be very cold.
That Texans game last night.
We're gonna dip down below 30 degrees below zero.
You see that interception?
And
ran back 98 yards.
That was you really shouldn't go outside unless you have to. Hey, Cameron.
Right by the chair.
I'm doing the weather.
Oh, very nice.
We're expecting at least 20 more minutes. 20 more.
Right.
We're expecting at least 20 more inches of snow. And and that's it for the weather. Cameron.
Ravenous black hair.
Cameron.
Huh?
You're on.
Oh.
Jesus.
Hold on. Blabbering while I'm trying to do the weather.
Good evening. I'm Cameron Buggy, and here are today's sports.
You suck, Buggy.
Stevie Wonder took first place in the Blind All-Stars Golf Tournament today. That's it? Yeah. I mean, there was no more. I don't know, I just figured there'd be more sports at least. No. Well, yeah, there could be. I mean, there could have been more sports, but, I don't know, the weather was good. Yeah, the weather was good.
Yeah, about the weather. Listen, Buggy, next time you talk when I'm doing the weather, it's going to be your ass.
Well, I was just, you know, telling a story.
I mean, you're back here blabbing about cheerleaders and the stupid Saxon.
All you got to do is mute your mic.
This has been the Boondock Action Team News.
I can do the weather.
But I didn't.
But I won't make mistakes like minutes.
That's it. Where are my cigarettes? I need a cigarette.
You're always smoking cigarettes. What is with you and cigarettes? Why are you always having to smoke cigarettes?
You make me nervous, okay?
Well, good. You should be. You don't do anything around here. You lay around. You're overpaid.
Yeah.
You're overpaid.
Yeah, but I'm a damn good-looking guy.
Oh, damn good-looking guy.
Due to time constraints, we now join the following WILD-TV preview in progress. He may have retired from Live with Regis and Kelly, but he hasn't retired from television. Starting next week, Regis Philbin invades primetime with the Regis Philbin Variety Hour.
So, okay, on yesterday's show, I guess I made a little racial slur when I made a joke about Oriental people driving 45 miles per hour in the speedway. So, I just wanted to apologize and be clear. I have no problems at all with Oriental people. Japs, chinks, slant eyes, gooks, or yellow people of any kind. I love people of all colors. I love colored people. And I tell you, that Uncle Ben makes some great rice. Aunt Jemima pancakes, forget about it. You kidding me? I love the Jigaboos. You give them a quarter and they do a little dance for you. What's not to love?
Ooh.
What? I can't keep up with you people.
Watch weeknights as Regis and his kooky cast performs all sorts of zany skits.
All the king's men. All the king's horses. I can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Hey, mister. Have you tried duct tape?
Duct tape? Who wants to see a big, sticky, silver egg man walking around? Somebody give this guy a lifeline.
But just because he's acting out nutty scenarios doesn't mean Regis has stopped doing interviews. Catch Regis Monday night when his guests are none other than Star Trek's Leonard Nimoy and George Takei.
And so we're all at the party, having a good time and all, and then Shatner looks at me and says, I don't think that brie is room temperature.
This guy's crazy, I tell you.
Well, you know, George, as much as I loved playing Spock on Star Trek, I believe that I actually enjoyed narrating Ancient Aliens even more.
Ancient? Oh, you're talking about all of that Chariots of the Gods business.
Precisely.
Well, let me tell you about Chariots of the Gods. I'm sitting in the back of my limo the other day, and I tell the driver to take me to JFK. Next thing I know, he pushes a couple of buttons, you know, and the dashboard starts talking back to him, literally giving him directions on how to get there. So I'm sitting there thinking, who am I? Captain Clink?
Reg, that's called GPS. It's been around a while now.
What is with all these inventions? I can't keep up with you people.
Join Regis again on Tuesday, when his guest will be Mr. Morgan Freeman.
Now, when I actually got to meet Nelson Mandela, he looked me up and down, extended his hand and shook mine, and said only two words. Thank you.
Ha! Do you believe this guy? He's a hoot! He's madcap, I tell ya! He's unglued! He's unglued!
Listen, Freeman, I know you're all about the voice, all that narration business, but listen, if I give you a quarter, will you put on the white lipstick, go out on the stage, and maybe dance a little jig for everybody? Maybe sing a little mammy? I think that's what everybody'd like to hear, am I right?
I don't really do that.
What's the matter with you people? You wouldn't know entertainment if it bit you in the tuchus.
Things get really out of hand on Wednesday, when Regis's guest is funny man Ricky Gervais.
Oh, people ask me all the time. Ricky, what's it going to be like after we die then? And so I tell them, remember what it was like for the first million years before you were born? It's going to be a lot like that.
Hey, whoa. Put that worm on someone else's hook, Fisher Boy. You're not going to make any gay jokes on my show. There's nothing wrong with being gay.
Well,
you want to bash on the Fruit Loops, you take that load of bullying business somewhere else, mister.
What gay? When did I say anything about being gay? I didn't say anything about being gay. She's probably gay. He's probably gay. Gay. They're all gay. That one's probably very gay. When did I say anything about gay?
Well, when you were talking about the afterlife, I figured it was some kind of slang you college kids use. What do I know? I can't keep up with you people.
No. Not even remotely, no. Well, it's a bit of a wet blanket in here now, isn't it?
Well, frankly, yes. A little bit.
On Thursday, things get mysterious when Regis's guest will be sci-fi expert George Norrie.
So, George, what's going on with this whole Aztec abacus thing?
Well, Regis, I just don't know. But what I do know, back when Art Bell was host, well, they didn't talk about the Mayan calendar. They didn't talk about 2012. But they did buy gold and solar-powered sea crane radios.
Whoa. Hold your cream and sugar there, Juan Valdez. Solar-powered? Since when have we been able to harness the energy of the sun?
Well, Regis, the very first solar cell was constructed by Charles Fritz back in the 1880s.
Holy moly, all this technology. Who am I? James Stock from the Scottish Secret Service? What? What?
The Regis Philbin Show. There's comedy.
That would be $500, please.
$500? Is that your final answer?
There's music.
I'm walking on sunshine, baby.
I'm walking on sunshine. Oh, my.
I'm walking on sunshine.
Oh. And don't it feel good?
And on Friday, join Regis when he gets serious for a very special one-on-one with Barack Hussein Obama.
Now listen, Barack, let's stop beating around the bush. A lot of people say you're a pretty powerful guy for a Negroid.
Well, Regis, now, before we get into any of that, now, the proper term is African-American. Now, the other thing is that I'm only half African-American. I'm also half Caucasian.
Burt's Bees lip balm. Afra who? When did we start mixing people? I go down to my local iced cream parlor, and I either get chocolate or vanilla, sometimes strawberry. But never for the life of me would I consider mixing them.
Well, now, Reach, they've done that too. Now, that's called Neapolitan, and it's a type of ice cream.
Yeah, it's been around for about 150 years. So,
when the twin powers activate, all this newfangled monkey business, I feel like Alexander Graham Edison.
Yes, it's the Regis Philbin Variety Hour.
A handheld device that adds and subtracts. I'd call that Calcufuture, not Calculator.
What? He doesn't get it, and it's funny.
Mail order brides, where do you put the stamp?
The Regis Philbin Variety Hour. Weeknights at 8 p.m. on WILD-TV.
I can't keep up with you people.
All right, folks, welcome back to Smartasses Radio. Yeah, unfortunately, we're not going to have any Nikki Nitro for you, but about 10 minutes away, we're going to get into our interview with, David J. Williams, the sci-fi author that he is. So that means I've got about 10 minutes to kill, and rather listen to me ramble on about nothing. How about a little, well, I don't want to use the word preview, but how about a little review of last Wednesday's hip-hop stop when Jazz Naz T was on the air. So I'm going to play a couple of songs from him. And the first one up right now is called Lil Eric. And again, if you want to catch the hip-hop stop, you can tune in to smartmarkradio.com every single Wednesday night at 10:30 p.m. So here's the first song called Lil Eric. All right, folks, that was, of course, gee whiz, I already forgot the name. How stupid am I? I was talking about with Rick Lieb, the producer of the SMR Hip Hop Stop. He was just mentioning that Sting is rumored to be on Raw tonight, so that's kind of where my mind went. But, no, that was Little Eric by Jazz Naz T. Jazz Nasty. So anyway, now I got one more song, and then this is going to be about it, and then I'm going to get our go to a commercial break and get our other guest on the phone. But this is a song by K Rhino. It's called Grand Deception, the Illuminati song. Now, I guess they played this on Beyond the Truth last week, which, of course, is our Thursday night show here on the Smart Mark Radio Network. But I guess Rick wants to tell everybody to listen to the lyrics of this song. They're amazing, one of the best songs ever. This is Grand Deception by K Rhino, and he is very, very, very much on the SMR Hip Hop Stop's Most Wanted list. So we're going to do that, then go to commercial, and then we will be back with David J. Williams, renowned sci-fi author.
As we move forward, anytime you come closer to something, your vision should get clearer. Am I right? You are a tool in the hidden hand that's using you. Please don't be delusional. The rulers of this world practice confusing you. The people and the priests and the imams have been jammed by government scams. Minds systematically programmed. Blatant black hatred and racism. The way they lace the whole world and nation with traces of Satanism. This place is a pagan prison. The founding fathers' enslaving intentions were no different than Bush's and Reagan's vision. 1776, it took action. This Illuminati took form and was spawned from a Colombian faction. Just flip your $1 bill over, and if you want me to expose the true code of deception, I will show you. We live in a designed wicked system. The number 13 is consistent in Masonic symbolism. It represents transformation. 12 completes the cycle, so 13 is rebirth and regeneration. The meanings of the symbol are strategically hid. On the left side, you see a 13-layered pyramid. Over that, sister all seeing eye where the light shines. A sign of the devil watching over you at all times. With the words Anuit Coeptis, 13 letters meaning he has favored our undertakings. Will you accept it? Or will you learn the science and ignore them? Under the pyramid you see Novus Ordo Seclorum. Translated, new order of the world, or the new world order. Authors and satanic fathers of mass slaughter. The eagle that you see on the right sits below 13 stars with a shield that has 13 stripes. And an olive branch in its claws with 13 leaps, which is supposed to be in its talons to represent peace. But peace was always on a decrease. His other claw holds 13 arrows of war, set to be released, and the letters at the bottom of the pyramid are fixed with the Roman numerals that equal 1776. The United States of America exists in a deep devilish abyss with truth and paganism mixed. Every president that ever lived was foul. They gather at Bohemian Grove where they bow down before the owl. See, the owl is wise and sees through the darkest of night, and there's a small one on the dollar near the one on the top right. It ain't hard to understand this government was never for us. The eagle was based off of the Egyptian hawk Horus. The 13 colonies grew into wicked sovereignty and made no apology for the obvious idolatry. Subconsciously, we follow the ways of the beast and pay homage to pagan gods when we say days of the week. Like Sunday, they worship the sun. Monday is moon day. Tyr, the god of war, was worshipped on Tuesday. Odin, the chief god, is who Wednesday is named for. Thursday is Thor's day, god of thunder, the mighty Thor. Friday was named after Frigga, notice the pattern. Saturday is the Roman god of agriculture, Saturn. Frigga was the goddess of love, the wife of Odin. The polytheistic theologies needed decoding. The rituals, like trips across the sand as man takes. The skull and bones fraternity, the secret handshake. But understand, he receives only 33 degrees. He secretly believes in Lucifer and other deities. Many powerful and rich people are controlled by these. They even hold a soul of several of your favorite MCs. Politicians telling lies, tongues riddled with thorns, and use hand
existence shaped in the form of devil horns. You don't fear this any harm because you don't know what it entails. Satan tampers with stem cells and sprays chemtrails. The so-called holidays are hypocrisy, established to use religious doctrines to commit annual robbery. Christmas split in half is Christ's mass. The so-called birth of Jesus, where every home has glowing lights cast. Christ the anointed one masked the birth celebration, but Jesus' birth was kept secret due to the situation. The king initiated a death plot because the Messiah was prophesied to rule, so Jesus' murder was authorized. No one knows the actual date. That's why sometimes you see Xmas. X-Men's unknown, but ignorance affects us. A fraud that was purposely flawed. December 25th, the birthday of the wicked ruler Nimrod. His whole disguise is part of Satan's universal rise. A holy prophet's life being pimped and commercialized. Positions like lights on trees, rooted in the Nicene Council in 325 AD. By Constantine, these matters were decreed. The concept of a virgin birth was actually conceived and then agreed with graven images in the temple. The fish on your car is called Onis, a Babylonian symbol. It's visibly contradictory, telling your children lies. You need to make them study Santa Claus's sick history. But yet we go wherever Satan leads us. The falsehoods we practice in his name ain't got nothing to do with Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming soon.
Johnny, it's Pikeman. I understand you're making a mess up there. Why don't you come on down out of those woods and we'll talk about it, over?
I can't do that, sir.
Well, we can't have you running around wasting friendly civilians, Rambo. Now turn off that walkie-talkie and get down here. I know what it's like.
Yeah? Well, if it hadn't been for that kingpin hairdresser and his curling iron, I wouldn't be in this mess. All I wanted were my bangs trimmed, sir. And he made me look like a little orphan Annie. Sylvester Stallone is Johnny Rambo in First Perm.
Oh yeah!
Pro Wrestling Weekend on SmartMarkRadio.com.
Sue Young.
I'm not afraid. Oh my gosh. You did not just call me out. Really? Really? You just call me out like that? How dare you? I have a cold, sir. Like, and then you're going to be calling me out of word sense like that.
Lanny Poffo, Lanny, thank you very much for being on the show this week.
I am the genius full of glory and renown, and I'm living in the past.
Miss Tefmacher.
You know, obviously I was with Kelly and Layla, and we had no choice but to get close, and then over time, you know, it becomes natural. But it is, seriously, you eat a shit sandwich every day for a very long time.
Mr. James J. Dillon.
You know, you talk about the greatest manager of all time. I've always regarded Bobby the Brain Heenan as the guy that set the standard for the rest of us.
Camille Ford.
What do you do other than watch my show?
I watch your show and sleep. That's it.
I bet you have the body of a 19-year-old athlete with a schedule like that.
Yes. You ever seen those pictures of Zeus?
You literally are the Greek god.
Whatever.
Diamond Dallas Page.
You want to know what I really thought? I thought, these guys know what they're doing. This is the WWF. I've got no heat here. This is just going to bring out the best in Taker.
Yeah, Sam, welcome to the show.
That's why I've always been happier here, is that they really like to feature the girls. They really like us to show off our athletic ability and, you know, be beautiful at the same time.
Sunday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Smart Mark Radio.
Hey, I'm Fred Meek, defensive back for the Boondock Saxons. Hey, kid, get away from my Betamax collection. That's it. 3 weeks in the closet for you. I am doing a new thing now. In partnership with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters organization of Greater Boondock, I am spending time with fatherless tots being a big bother to them, so they know what it is like to have a male authority figure around when they are causing mischief. Hey, there's Tom Crash, our quarterback. He's a big bother too.
Hey, Freddy. Boy, it sure is fulfilling being a big bother to fatherless youth.
I had Jimmy here wax his car and told him he could drive it this weekend if he scored high on his math test. When he got an A-, I grounded him for a week and took it out myself cruising uptown.
If you want to be like Tom and I,
hey, Jimmy,
and help serve your community,
just run down to the corner and get your old Uncle Tommy a pack of smoke.
By being a big bother for unruly tots in your neighborhood who are in need of a male authority figure to teach them a thing or two.
Whatever they want. No, you can't get yourself anything.
Visit
You think money grows on trees, you little...
BigBothers.org or dial 1-800-BOTHERS.
Scram.
That's 1-800-BOTHERS.
Punk.
Remember, if you don't have a father, have a bother.
Nothing spells a Carps baseball game like a bag of Bobby O's potato chips.
Hi, Uncle Rose.
Oh, no.
Can we have some of your Bobby O's potato chips?
No. If I've told you kids once, I've told you 1,000 times. You can't have any of my Bobby O's potato chips.
Aw, come on, Uncle Rose. Even Fluffy wants some.
Oh, no. Not you, too.
Yes, everybody loves Bobby O's potato chips. Available now at your local Boondock, Montana grocer.
Hello, Carps fans. It's me, Lefty Mayshak, the old Nuxa. You know, using the Nux on my left hand won me a lot of games for the Boondock Carps, but they're not all that great for enjoying a handful of tasty Bobby O's potato chips. Bobby O's potato chips. They're salty, they're crunchy, and now available in lemon, lime, and grape.
Hi, I'm Cy Goldman, the copy and paste king. Do you have an article you need copied and pasted? Are you tired of getting your news direct from the source and want to start reading your news secondhand? Hey, then come to me, Cy Goldman, the copy and paste king.
But what about the Hollywood news?
I copy and paste it.
What about news from professional wrestling? Can you copy and paste that too?
I copy and paste it.
What about the stories from the modeling industry?
I copy and paste it. If you got something you need copied and pasted, call me, Cy Goldman, the copy and paste king, at 1-800-COPY-AND-PASTE. Sure, it's more than 7 numbers. That's me. Passing along the savings to you.
But what about my foreign business reports?
Sure, I'll copy and paste that too. If you want to be like me, Cy Goldman, the copy and paste king, then copy and paste my URL right into your web browser's address bar. It's http://www.copyandpasteking.com/. Local Boondock residents can come see me, the copy and paste king, at the corner of Chester and Frank, right next door to Pompadour's for Poodles. Stop right-clicking your mouse and come see me, Cy Goldman, the copy and paste king, where Control-C, Control-V is mightier than the sword.
Come to me no more, Moses. When are you going to bring me real proof of your God?
And when are you going to let my people go?
All that they ask is to sit at the foot of Mount Sinai, to warm their souls by the burning bush of God, then to listen to Smartasses Radio.
To interact with Smartasses Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the hosts at SmartassesNet using the hashtag HailJackie. Smartasses Radio. To call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype. And now, back to Smartasses Radio.
I just don't understand why you want.
Wrestling Weekend on SmartMarkRadio.com.
Sue Young.
I'm not afraid. Oh, my God. You did not just call me out. Really? I'm literally out? You just call me out like that? How dare you? I have a cold, sir. Like, and then you're going to be calling me out of word sense like that.
Lanny Poffo. Lanny, thank you very much for being on the show this week.
I am the genius full of glory and renown, and I'm living in the past.
Miss Tefmacher.
You know, obviously I was with Kelly and Layla, and we had no choice but to get close, and then over time, you know, it becomes natural, but it is... Seriously, you eat a shit sandwich every day for a very long time.
Mr. James J. Dillon.
You know, you talk about the greatest manager of all time. I've always regarded Bobby the Brain Heenan as the guy that set the standard for the rest of us.
Camille Ford.
What do, other than watch my show?
I watch your show and sleep. That's it.
I bet you have the body of a 19-year-old athlete with a schedule like that.
Yes. You ever seen those pictures of Zeus?
You literally are the Greek god.
Whatever. Diamond Dallas Page.
You want to know what I really thought? I thought, these guys know what they're doing. This is the WWF. I've got no heat here. This is just going to bring out the best in Taker.
Yeah, Sam. Welcome to the show.
That's why I've always been happier here, is that they really like to feature the girls. They really like us to show off our athletic ability and, you know, be beautiful at the same time.
Sunday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Smart Mark Radio.
Hello, Seattle.
Do you smell what the Rock is cooking?
I'm Casey Kasem.
Jay Seinfeld.
Ben Newman.
Kramer.
George Costanza.
I'm George Takei.
Matthew McConaughey.
Patrick Stewart.
Morgan Freeman.
Krusty the Clown.
Mo the Bartender.
Batman.
Skeletor.
Apocalypse.
Alec Baldwin.
Ian McKellen.
It's me, it's TDP.
I love you, Spartacus.
Ooh, yeah!
$5 celebrity impersonation, voicemail greetings, and other voice services from Johnny Video at johnnyvideo.net. Want to catch all of Smart Mark Radio on your Android? Go to smartmarkradio.com and download our Android app for only $2.99.
Listen, we just here, and I've just found the best newfangled thing on the planet since sliced donuts. And it's called Stupid Mike Radio. Regis, it's called Smart Mark Radio. Smarter who? I can't keep up with you people.
All right, welcome back to Smart Asses Radio, folks. Boy, it's just been one heck of a show today with, the passing of Nikki Nitro's dog, which condolences go out to her. But then David and I here, we're having a little trouble getting our phones to work together. So we played a little bit of an extra commercial for you there. But let's not go ahead into a lengthy interview. David J. Williams, world-renowned sci-fi author, welcome to Smart Asses Radio. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Johnny, it's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. No problem at all. So the first question I got to ask you is, you had mentioned that you are a cat guy. You like cats?
there's a rumor going around about that, yes. I have to plead guilty as charged.
So tell us all about – well, the first thing that comes to mind is – because I, for one, am a cat guy. I had a cat for 17 years. His name was Alex. Yeah, he knew how to do tricks. He could sit pretty. He could shake. He could, you know, come when you call him, play fetch, all that kind of stuff. But I'm always reminded – I don't know how big of a Seinfeld fan you are, but I remember Jerry and George were talking about somebody that Elaine was dating or something, and I think Jerry said, yeah, he's a cat guy, and then George was just like kind of scrunched up his face, and he's like, guys with cats, I don't know. Like, do you ever get that?
It's a stereotype, right? The same way it's, you know, someone's a cat lady, or you can be a cat guy. And I have a particular problem in that I ended up with three cats. You know, so the more cats you have, the more of a problem you have, right? So first I had one cat. He died. So I got two because I figured one would be a spare tire in case one of them met with a similar fate. But they both confounded my plans and lived. So then I'm left with two cats. And then there was this three-legged cat in the alleys in Los Angeles, and I couldn't resist. And so that brought me to three cats. And then when I moved in with my girlfriend, she has a fourth cat. So it's four cats now. But the great thing is that when I tell people that me and my girlfriend have four cats, they assume the cats are all coming from my girlfriend. They're very, you know, gendered and stereotypical about it. And so I'm able to evade the cat guy accusations. But for the purposes of now, right now, I'm going public, guilty as charged.
Right. I don't know. Cats just crack me up, man. Just like, I don't know.
They're endlessly entertaining. I mean, you never know what they're going to do next. And they don't know what they're going to do next either. That's what's great about it.
Right. Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Like, suddenly they could be cleaning themselves, and then suddenly they need to be in the furthest room in your flat instantly. You know, like right now. I need to run into that room.
They need to be on the other side of the closed door. I think that's the important part of this. They if there's a door that's closed, they've got to be on the other side. And I mean, you've got to dig their act, right? Because, you know, we do all this, you know, meditation and Zen and New Age stuff, trying to get with the moment and get in the moment and forget about the past and the future. And, I mean, Los Angeles is filled with that. Cats are natural Buddhas. They have natural Buddha consciousness. They are in the moment. That's it. That's all that exists in that moment.
Right. It's very true. We have a lot to learn from cats. I am now on a mission to get a bunny rabbit. Like, I've just, like, been watching videos of them, and my mom is a big fan of rabbits, and so I'm, like, watching these videos, and, like, they just crack me up, just, like, their big furry face, just that nose constantly going and all the chewing, and, like, that's my goal now. Wherever I end up moving to, I need to make sure that I move to somewhere that takes rabbits. Do you have any affinity to them, or do you like them, or what's your take on rabbits?
Well, I'm with you. I've never owned one. I've the only two animals I've owned are cats and hermit crabs. One hermit crab, actually. But rabbits, I mean, I dig the nose. I think that nose is great. If you look at it, it's just there's no way for it to stop moving. It literally is like. You know, it's like a little mobile part. I mean, there's no at-rest position, you know. The one caveat I have, or the one reservation I have about rabbits is just they leave that little trail of pellets around behind them, and you just got to be in constant cleanup mode. But, I mean, if you control the environment, then, you know, they're kind of outrageous. They're really great.
Supposedly, they're very easily litter trained, so that's my hope
anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You shouldn't be telling me this, because now I'm going to get off the phone afterwards and I'm going to convince my girlfriend we should have a rabbit, and, you know, then that'll, you know, be... I mean, actually, there's some great YouTube video of cats and rabbits sort of playing along together, so you never know.
Right, exactly. So anyway, let's talk about you a little bit. I mean, obviously you're most famous for the Autumn Rain trilogy, which would include what, the Mirrored Heavens, the Burning Skies, and the Machinery of Light. Go ahead and talk about that a little bit. Let people know what they're in for if they start with the Mirrored Heavens and then want to continue.
Sure. Well, it is a complete trilogy, I should say. There's a bit of a trend in sci-fi and fantasy these days to do series that kind of go on forever. You can always add a fourth or fifth book. This does actually wrap it up, unfashionable as that may be. We're talking about a trilogy that, set in the 22nd century, you're looking really at 22nd century espionage, and you're talking about warfare that is boiled out into both outer space and also cyberspace. And the story focuses on a series of agents who are basically trying to stop a terrorist group called Autumn Rain, which is blowing up the world's space elevator, and they make out Autumn Rain is, you know, basically waging war across the Earth-Moon system, and they make Al-Qaeda look like the Teletubbies. I mean, they are absolutely the next generation of 22nd century terrorists, and there's a hunt for them across the Earth-Moon system before they can strike again, and worse, they seem to be on the verge of precipitating a war between the two superpowers, because by the early 22nd century, Earth has been locked, or the Earth-Moon system, I should say, has been locked in the grip of a second Cold War between West and East for some decades now. So we focus in particular on Claire Haskell, who is a razor, a netrunner, as it were, and Marlowe, Jason Marlowe, who's a mechanic. So basically the idea is that Haskell works the net and the programming, and Marlowe's the heavy. He kicks in the doors, and the two of them are going to have to go down a very deep rabbit hole in order to get to the bottom of Autumn Rain before they strike again. So it's on online at autumnrain2110.com. Where I try to put a lot of material out there that relates to the world of the books, that relates to the geopolitical situation, geopolitical context in the year 2110. That was sort of what got me started into science fiction.
Gotcha. You know, the way you talk about it a little bit, it almost reminds me of the kind of gritty nature that was, if you remember the show Space Above and Beyond. Were you a fan of that show at all when it was on Fox a few years ago?
You know, I remember it, but I never actually saw it, so I'm not really able to speak intelligently about it. I'll clearly have to give it a look, though.
Gotcha. Yeah, it was kind of like Marines in Space, and... You know, if you compare it to something like Star Trek, where everything was carpeted and air-conditioned and, you know, gravity control and all that, Space Above and Beyond was kind of the exact opposite of that, where, yeah, they still kind of had gravity control on the ships and everything, but it was more like you would picture Marines acting as they're on a submarine or kind of thing, except it was in space, and they were at war with a planet where they had a nickname for the bad guy aliens called Chigs, because they look like the bugs, the Chigs.
Huh.
And it was a great show. I mean, I absolutely loved it. It would come on after the NFL on Sunday nights, and
nice.
Kind of like Fox does with a lot of series. They cancel them way too prematurely. So, but
they
have
a bit of a track record with that, don't they? I mean, what I was really trying to do, I think, is marry up science fiction with techno-thriller and with espionage. I mean, all the sort of old spy thrillers of the Cold War, that was what I was trying to sort of infuse that with a sci-fi sensibility. My agent actually sold the books to Random House as John le Carré on sci-fi crack. So there was a bit of there was a bit of that kind of old-school espionage but pumped up for a new century going on in there.
Right, that's kind of the vibe I got when you're talking about the guy kicking in the doors and stuff like that. I picture, you know, I'm overusing the word gritty here, but, you know, just the gritty old dick running around in the 40s, but, you know, in a future setting and everything, too. Was there any relevance? I noticed the president was President Harrison. Was there anything behind that name, like reasons that you picked it, or did it just sound like a really good presidential name?
A little bit of both, actually. I mean, there was a little bit of a vague nod of the hat to, you know, the old actor Rex Harrison. Not that I necessarily saw him as the model for it. Part of it was meant to imply subtly that, you know, traditional quote-unquote American values were going to be continued in this future context. But this is very much a post Republic America in the books. I mean, I sort of see America's transition right now as in some ways being that of ancient Rome. You know, you're looking at a transition. Yeah, everyone thought that Rome was falling apart, and what was really going on is that Republic was falling apart and Empire was rising. And what I was trying to do with that was to look at where that might go and to really do a study of, and I wrote a lot of a book in Washington, D.C., particularly in the years after 9/11, and that had a great influence on me. So trying to do a study of the national security state under severe pressure. What happens? What levers get pulled? How does that work when the enemy actually gets inside the national security apparatus?
Gotcha. I didn't know, because I know there was a blog that had mentioned you called Indiana Jim, and of course that's a throwback to Indiana Jones, so I'm like, I wonder if that's like a throw to Harrison Ford or, of course, you know, William Henry Harrison. But I like the way you explain that ancient Rome and Rex Harrison, because Rex Harrison, of course, played Caesar in the film Cleopatra. So maybe that's...
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's subconsciously, that may have been what's going on. I mean, I I'm a huge fan of history and the classics in particular. And, you know, if I had any affinity for Latin whatsoever, I might very well be stuck in academia somewhere, you know, just doing nothing but Roman history. Because it's endlessly fascinating. And the stuff those guys went through was... You know, it went on for hundreds of years. I mean, the sheer scale of it just almost beggars the mind that empire lasted for 400 years all over Europe, and at a point where distances were much longer. You know, it was far more difficult to get from Egypt to Britain back then than it is now, obviously. So in a sense, you know, that was an imperium that was vaster than anything we've ever seen subsequently.
Right, yeah, if you divide it by the time it takes to go from border to border, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'm fascinated, too, by... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I became fascinated, too, by, you know, there's a lot of talk about weaponization of space and what that really means, and there's actually a great deal in the public domain about that. You know, it's very clear that the U.S. military understands that they can only win wars, and I'm talking here conventional wars, you know, wars where you're fighting peer competitors, by control of space, and that gradually across the next 100 years, space is going to be weaponized. Now, I was trying to look at what does that look like, because space is already militarized, right? I mean, you know, when we destroyed the Iraqi army in 2003 or in, you know, 91 in the Gulf War, we're doing that because, you know, I mean, every time you get in your car with GPS, the U.S. military application, and, you know, it's very hard to lose a battle, particularly conventional battle, where you can see the enemy and the enemy can't see you. So, you know, Saddam Hussein has all these divisions in the desert. We can get behind him. We can get around him. We can do whatever. And in some ways, it's a little like what was going on, you know, World War One, where you start out with trenches being dug across Europe, and then the generals have these airplanes, these newfangled devices that have been invented 10 years ago, and they fly them over the opposing trenches. And then at some point, the general says, you know what I'd really like to do is I'd like to do something about all the enemy airplanes flying over me. How about you mount a machine gun on one of these things and start shooting those guys down? And that's the evolution in warfare that's going on right now. Obviously, fourth-generation warfare and insurgency warfare, you know, makes that much more complex. But ultimately, it comes down to supremacy in space and cyberspace. And I was trying to write books within that broader context.
So if Side A has Star Wars up there, for lack of a better term, then, okay, because that's what it was called with the whole Reagan thing, the Star Wars.
Sure.
You know, then Side B obviously is going to put together intelligent ways of taking that out of the air, and then there goes your conflict for your book, right?
They would have to take it out of the equation, and that's the dynamic you cite there with Star Wars with SDI is exactly right. You can, in some ways, view the last stage of the Cold War as, you know, people say, well, you know, Reagan outspent the Soviets. What happened specifically was that the U.S. demonstrated the capability to build space-based installations in a way that the Soviet Union just couldn't keep up with. I mean, the space shuttle, the Soviets saw that as a space weapon, because what the space shuttle can do is it can re-enter and orbit at any point. You know, you have wings, you have cross-horizontal capability. So it's not just simply like when the Apollo rocket comes in and the parachute deploys and you're like, okay, I know where that guy's going to go. They were worried that the space shuttle could come in from any direction and start using X-ray weaponry on their silos. Now, obviously, that never got to that point. But, you know, extrapolate this across several more decades of technology, and particularly when you throw directed energy weaponry into the equation, and that's what ultimately will happen. If you say a contemporary example, if China is looking at, you know, war games, potential contingencies where they might clash with us across the next few decades, and again, I'm not saying that's what China wants, it's just that militaries plan for contingencies. They know if they're going to do something about the U.S. 7th Fleet and about the U.S. ability to interfere around Taiwan and in the South China Sea, they're going to have to use some kind of weaponry on our satellites. And so there you talk about Pentagon war games involving Chinese ground-to-earth, ground-to-space lasers, that kind of thing. Again, we're all at war games, right? We haven't fortunately got to the real thing.
Right. That's ironic that you mentioned China, because I've been making a joke lately, that both on Facebook and at the top of the show today, that I pointed out how America is actually $1.3 trillion in debt to China. So just kind of as a little tongue-in-cheek humor, I've been posting videos of like the hot women of the Chinese army and kind of going, I for one welcome our Chinese overlords, you know, look how hot they are, kind of thing. So,
well, it's clearly a super complicated relationship, isn't it? And you know, and then you look at China's space program and their aspirations to get on the moon, and you know, economic ties, though, by itself does not mean that you can't end up going to war. I mean, people said before World War One, you know, gee, warfare is impossible because everyone owes debt to each other, and the trade routes over Europe are such that it's not in anyone's interest to fight, and war still came anyway. I think, though, you know, to be fair, what we're likely to see across the next decade or so is more just theater-by-theater conflict. I seriously doubt we'd see an actual clash with China.
Right. Right, yeah, and you're right about the moon thing, because they just, it was, well, it feels like yesterday, but it was last year sometime they did the whole Jade Rabbit thing, getting that up to the moon, too.
That Jade Rabbit was great, and it was sending out, you know, updates and tweets on, you know, poetry about its impending demise, and then it went offline and came back on, and it's interesting, right? Because, you know, we went to the moon in the 70s, and, you know, obviously there are people who say we didn't, but I think we did.
Right.
We went to the moon in the 60s and 70s, and we haven't gone back. And, you know, you sort of wonder, well, what would make us go back? Well, one thing that would certainly make us go back is if a taikonaut lands on the moon and raises a Chinese flag. I think, you know, and China starts building a lunar installation, I think that would wake the American public up. Whether or not we have the money to do anything about it, I don't know. But, you know, in some ways, one of the best, you know, when you pull forward from all the space weaponization issues and you look at popular optics, the best reason for going into space is because the other guy's doing it. And thus,
right,
that's what led to the space race and all that good stuff.
Right. Well, didn't they have a UN conference about that after a while that said, like, everybody in the UN signed this moon thing saying that, okay, nobody is allowed to claim ownership of this? Didn't that occur, or am I talking out of my butt?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You had the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, which essentially forbid national ownership of the ability of nations to claim any kind of ownership. You know, I mean, whether corporations can rent out an asteroid, that's a little more ambiguous, right? And so then you get into interesting questions like space mining. It also said, though, specifically you can't put weapons in orbit. It says you can't put nuclear weapons in orbit. You know, because that would cause a great deal of disruption to traffic, EMP effect, that kind of thing. There are, of course, rumors that different sides have put warheads in orbit, but no one certainly come out and admitted that. If you look at the record, though, I mean, the 50s and 60s, the U.S. military did a lot of research with what happens when you detonate warheads in orbit, Project Starfish, that kind of thing. But, yeah, officially, you know, you're not allowed to put much in orbit. Now, there have been additional U.N. attempts to further ban militarization of space or weaponization of space, but as I suggested earlier, it's almost inevitable, right? I mean, once you militarize space, it would be like saying in 1910, let's not weaponize the air. Well, you know, you've got the ability to get up there, and you've got to get weaponry up there. Sooner or later, you have the most.
Yeah, you cut out a little bit there at the end.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying that sooner or later, you're going to get, if you've got the capacity of have had to put, you know, the air, it'd be like a scene, you know, let's not weaponize the air, but in some ways that ends up being inevitable.
Right. I wanted to ask you a question, too, because when you mentioned Al-Qaeda, that kind of, like, jogged my memory a little bit, because I know that he actually blogged about it. And this, you know, if you don't feel comfortable answering this, don't. But didn't you have some kind of a controversy with Jerry Purnell, who's the, or at least was, president of the Sci-Fi Fantasy Writers of America? Wasn't there like something where he was like badgering your books, or again, if you don't want to talk about it, that's
no, terrible. not at all. I mean, Jerry's a great guy, and he's obviously one of the deans of old school science fiction. I mean, he's been around for decades, and he's a tremendous personality, and his his books, in particular those with Larry Niven, are just great. But yeah, I appeared at the L.A. Science Fiction Club a few years back, and he and I got in a little bit of a contretemps. It wasn't over Al-Qaeda specifically. Some of it was, as I recollect now, actually over what you're just talking about, SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, in that Jerry was arguing that it couldn't possibly be used in an offensive capability. And I think he and I were perhaps, he was perhaps misunderstanding my position in that I wasn't saying that the U.S. in the 1980s was or was not going to do that. It's simply that once you build defense weaponry against nuclear warheads, that almost that can become an offensive capability. That can be used as an offensive capability in that, you know, you can launch your warheads without fear of a retaliatory strike. You can use your space-based hardware against the enemy's ground installations. And I think Jerry was bristling for, I don't want to speak to him, but he's not here right now, so I guess I'm going to have to. He I think, was saying, well, there's no way that they'd ever have done that. And I was trying to say, no, Jerry, put yourself in the position of the Soviets. The Soviets were worried that we were going to do that. We also had a big disagreement over global warming in that he doesn't believe that man-made global warming is happening, and I to take that pretty seriously and believe it does. And so there was a bit of a disagreement over that as well. But in the end, we parted as best of friends. I gave him a copy of my book. I went back there subsequently. I think it's one of those things where we just kind of agreed to disagree.
Well, gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, the global warming was one that that's what I read about too. And yeah, I'm with you. I mean, global warming's a reality, and I kind of get a little rothy and vervy when people try to tell me that it's made up too. It's like, no, it's really not.
It's one of originally, so in some ways it raises my eyebrows how politicized some things get in the United States, and this is one of them. Propaganda, the money pouring into the notion that global warming isn't real. Step back. It's just like you're looking at several centuries of industrial capacity, and the idea that that wouldn't end, I mean, to say that it's absurd that that wouldn't impact the planet's climate is in itself absurd, and I think it speaks to a larger degree of political manipulation of the populace by the elites so that some people can make more money. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that, you know, a lot of the solutions have been, there's a lot of people make a lot of money over carbon trading, and you get into all sorts of stuff over that. Man-made global warming is a reality, and we will face the consequences across the next several decades.
Right. Well, I'll tell you.
Jerry and I disagreed over that, and you know, I suspect we probably agree over far more things than we disagree over. But as I remember, it was, you know, he is a little bit deaf, and so he does tend to shout, and so things maybe got a little bit more emotive than they should. But you know, anyone listening, I grew up reading Jerry Pournelle's book, so it became a little bit surreal to be in the room where, you know, we're kind of going back and forth at each other, but, you know, hey, maybe that's what we can call success in science fiction these days.
Exactly, yeah. So what about the Star Wars continuity and the Star Wars canon and the Blade Squadron? Talk about that a little bit. I'm sure you know what I'm referring to.
Sure, and I'll just sort of note the shift of gears here in that this is the more typical way in which we're using the phrase Star Wars. Johnny and I are talking about Star Wars, the Strategic Defense Initiative for all those kids out there. That was back when Reagan was trying to put weapons into space. Now we're talking about the much more well-known Star Wars, the brainchild of George Lucas. I had become involved in the Star Wars franchise. A writing partner and I wrote a short story for the Star Wars Insider magazine, and it involved, it was called Maze Run. It came out a few years back, involved the adventures of Han Solo and Chewie on a smuggling run. And then we got asked to do another story relatively recently called Blade Squadron. We called it Blade Squadron. The genesis of it was interesting in that in movie number 6 or movie number 3, depending on how you're counting, Return of the Jedi, you have the Battle of Endor. And there was some cut art from the Battle of Endor. There was some art lying around the cutting room floor. I don't think it was ever actually filmed, but there was art showing a Star Destroyer engaged with a bunch of B-Wings. And it turned out that this was, in fact, Darth Vader's old Star Destroyer, not the one that he's commanding in, I mean, I'm getting all down the weeds here, right, but not the one that he's commanding in Return of the Jedi, which, of course, is the executor, the executioner, rather, but the one that he had at the beginning of A New Hope, where you have that very first shot of Princess Leia's ship being chased by this monster ship, which just turns out to be a relatively typical quote-unquote Star Destroyer once you start to pull back the canvas in Empire. Anyway, that ship, the Devastator, ultimately got in a punch-up with a B-Wing squadron at the Battle of Endor, and the folks at Star Wars Insider magazine said, hey, Dave, it'd be great if you and Mark, my writing partner, could actually go and write a story about this B-Wing squadron fight. And so we did, and we rapidly realized it was becoming too big to be put into one part. It became a two-part story across number 149 and number 150 of the Star Wars Insider magazine. And then no sooner, and that was great fun, and we got to invent new characters, and they drew the art for those characters, and it was just, you know, absolutely geek-tastic, as it were. And then it turned out that there was an announcement made subsequently by Disney that that short story was occurring at the beginning of the new, quote-unquote, Star Wars canon. So now that Disney has acquired the IP from Lucas, they are declaring a lot of the old canon defunct and are beginning new canon. Obviously, the 6 movies remain as canon. And first of the new canon turned out to be this short story, Blade Squadron. I don't know if that was less maybe the quality of the prose and more just simply the chronology of it, but we had no idea when we got commissioned to write the story that that was going to kick off the canon. And in fact, the first thing we heard about it, we read about it in the Hollywood Reporter, and we were like, well, that's pretty cool. So we ended up making a little bit of history there, and that was you know, something that we never saw coming.
Right. The little bit that I read said that they were really going to focus on the continuity and kind of tying everything in together more, which, you know, kind of was odd for me to read because I was like, I didn't realize that it was that untied before. But so, yeah, that's really awesome news. Do you ever get involved in, like, or have been asked to or any aspirations to write some of the Star Wars comic books at all for the future? Or was that, like, your involvement with it and you're just going to kind of leave well enough alone there?
Well, no, I think with Star Wars, you'd always love more involvement. You'd be hard-pressed as a, you know, veteran science fiction writer to say no to any time that Star Wars came knocking. The novel that I've done was not Star Wars. It was a Transformers novel. So I do have some more experience in the tie-in space. Mark Williams and I had Transformers Retribution, which came out earlier this year, and that was a huge amount of fun. So anytime you're talking about original fiction is great, don't get me wrong, but anytime you're talking about playing in someone else's sandbox, particularly talking about Star Wars or Transformers, it's really tough to say no to those guys. You know, you grew up with that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, you've got a pretty impressive resume, not only, yeah, Transformers Prime and then all of your own stuff, but then you've got the Call of Duty franchise too, correct? With Homework? Or, I'm sorry, Homeworld? Homeworld?
Well, two different things, both within my the video game experience that I've during the time I've spent in the video game industry. I had co-writer and had story concept for a game called Homeworld, which those old guard veterans of the video game industry might remember. It came out in '99. It won PC Gamer's Game of the Year award. I mean, it was a 3D space real-time strategy game came out from Relic Entertainment, based in Vancouver in 99, and the sequel, Homeworld 2, in 2003. That IP fell dormant, and then Gearbox, Gears of War and Borderlands, have recently resurrected that IP. They bought it at an auction, at a fire sale, and they're going to do something really cool with it. And I'm involved on the game's prequel. So right. It looks like there's going to be more really interesting content in the Homeworld universe. And then in the Call of Duty universe, I had simply done some consulting with a couple of the studios in Activision, which is always a lot of fun. I mean, they were looking, obviously, at you know, potential future war material, that kind of thing. And so we talked a little bit about that. And obviously that's an incredibly dynamic, vibrant franchise, and in many ways evergreen. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Writing in video games and writing in, you know, versus, say, novels or short stories, it's different in that you're writing for you write short stories and novels, you're writing for the general public. You write in video games, you're really writing for the video game team that's making the video game.
Right.
So it can be fascinating to be, you know, you're working, you're talking with the programmers, you're talking with the artists, you're talking about what's possible, what's not possible, what can we actually do here within the story budget that we actually have. So both of those were a lot of fun.
Right. That's amazing. I kind of like the way you put that because, like, you know, I do a lot of voiceovers, and one thing that I have to always remind people, you know, because they're worried about spelling, they're worried about what they learned in English class and, you know, that kind of thing. And to an extent, you know, I need good punctuation and proper capitalization and all that. But I often have to remind people, look, you're writing for ears, not for eyes. You know, if you want me to, a lot of times I'll tell them like some inane foreign word that I've never heard. Rather than spelling it correctly, you're almost better writing it out misspelled so that I will say it phonetically correct. And so it's just
exactly.
It's interesting somebody kind of use that same phrase. I'm writing for the video game producers as opposed to the, you know, it's just, it rings very true to me because it's something that comes out of my mouth on almost a daily basis, actually. So anyway,
well, and exactly. I think it's a great point, right? That like what you can get away with in the novel and in a written word on a written page is very different than what you have to do when you're literally imagining some actor speaking your words. You know, there's much more of a rhythm. You're talking about theater in a sense. You're talking about film at that point, and that demands in some ways a very different discipline.
Exactly. And when you're writing for eyes, it really doesn't matter what you write as long as it flows nice. But when you're writing for ears, it's exactly what you're saying. Like, have you tried reading this out loud? Because you put about four different tongue twisters in there. You know, you might want to grab the thesaurus and kind of move some words around so that it doesn't come out that way. So, yeah, those are definitely things you got to be cognizant of. And it's the same for me, too. Like, whether I'm doing a voiceover for a commercial or whether I'm doing a voiceover for a cartoon, it's still some level of voice acting. And writers do. They need to be cognizant of that. That's also a very good point. So,
yeah, I mean, you're out there saying these words and putting a rhythm and a cadence into it, and you know, and improvising where it's not. I mean, where you have to sort of, you know, that's part of, I think, your role is to supply that missing link or tell the writer, you know, you can type it, but you can't necessarily say it. You know, that we've got a broader audience here that we've got to get across the message.
Right. So anyway, I got it, and it's starting to storm here. So if you hear thunder and rain, it's because it's thundering and raining. But I noticed that you recently did an interview for Fanboy Comics, and I saw Wonder Woman's name mentioned in there somewhere. So I'm kind of wondering, like, are DC Comics and Wonder Woman and all that something that you pay attention to, or I don't know. I just wanted to bring up Wonder Woman and Fanboy.
Yeah, well, I love the folks at Fanboy Comics. We had a lot of fun last Sunday, just talking through. And they have a great format. I mean, they talk through a bunch of different agenda items of interest to those in the room. We were talking a little bit about how it looked like some of the current writers on Wonder Woman are you know, steering clear of the F word here being feminism. And I don't know the extent to which that, you know, they are or not steering clear of that, but we were just talking a little bit about how, you know, I mean, I come from the obviously, you know, Wonder Woman in some ways is a feminist character by definition. I mean, I come from the old school, which says feminism is this radical doctrine that women are equal to men. And, you know, again, it's, in the United States, these things get politicized to the point where they stop meaning what they actually mean. But
right.
As far as overall comics, I mean, you know, I look, I love a lot of what's out there. My roots are really the other side of the pond, to be honest with you. 2000 AD in particular, Judge Dredd, a lot, you know, which most listeners probably know as the name of two relatively unsuccessful movies, but is actually one of the longest running continuity characters in comic book history and has been going strong since the late 70s. Done by John Wagner, who wrote the original graphic novel, A History of Violence, which, of course, ultimately was award-winning screenplay worldwide. And so that's, for comics, that's where I come at it from. In 2000 AD, and I think Warren Ellis says this on his blog better than I ever could, that it had a huge influence on all of us growing up in the 70s and 80s, that what they were doing, how far ahead they were in terms of the science fiction, the cutting-edge concepts, the cutting-edge ideas. It blew our minds when we were, you know, kids, and it aged. It matured, you know, gradually as we got older. So, you know, there's a reason I still subscribe to 2000 AD today, because they're – and if you look at the guys who were writing for them back in the 80s and 90s, they all went on to conquer America, as it were. I mean, Neil Gaiman, Garth Ennis, Pat Mills, a long list of John Wagner, who went on to write for DC and Marvel and lay the groundwork for some of what went on in the next generation.
Right.
So anyway,
yeah.
bit of a tangent from Wonder Woman, but talk comics. I always sort of throw Judge Dredd in there at some point.
Which movie did you like better of the two? Because although they were the same, they were a little bit different. Which of the two did you? I actually liked the original.
Well, I thought they were both unsuccessful in different ways, and I'll go on to say that I enjoyed the second one enormously. I mean, I think that the second one suffered from being too close to the plot of Raid Redemption, which, you know, the Indonesian movie, which came out the same year, and really just was one of those things where neither guy was ripping off the other. It's just that idea was in the zeitgeist at that point. What I would have loved to have seen is a combination of the second one's, you know, gritty verisimilitude with the first one's epic scope. I mean, I do think the first one gets a hard, it gets given a hard time, and in some ways, you know, they broke the continuity and the whole law of that character, and that Judge Dredd never removes his helmet, and instead Stallone's out there removing his helmet, and it's no longer Judge Dredd, it's Stallone. The economics of Hollywood at that point in particular meant, well, he kind of had to. But I did enjoy the epic scope of the first one. I mean, I think they got a lot of the tone wrong and a lot of the comic relief stuff wrong. But, you know, showing the cursed earth, showing all these gangs, showing the struggle for power in the Hall of Justice, they got a lot of that right. But again, you know, unless you've actually read several hundred issues of 2000 AD, and that was just sort of dumped on you, there's a reason it bombed. The second one, I think, got a little bit more unfortunate. I think Alex Garland is a great writer, and, you know, I love a lot of what he's done. 28 Days Later, Sunshine, those Danny Boyle movies are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be that, oh, gosh, I'm drawing a blank right now. What's his name? Carl Urban. People might be on a little bit of Carl Urban overload, because I don't know what it was, but, like, somewhere between 2010 and 2012, 2013, it seemed like Carl Urban was literally in every single movie. So maybe that's part of it, too.
Sometimes that happens, right? You know, these laws get passed that, you know, like, there seemed to be a law for a while there that Gerard Depardieu had to be in every French movie, right? I mean, just
somewhere
there was a law that said that. And maybe the same was true of Carl Urban. I don't know. I found him tremendously entertaining as far as that overall. But, you know, I mean, the reality of Mega City 1 is way, way crazier than anything that they were able to do in that movie. The first one hinted at it, but in some ways it is a little like, you know, some of that Metal Hurlant stuff, you know, the comic from the 70s, the heavy metal, where it's had a huge impact on science fiction. You look at Blade Runner and this sort of thing, but, you know, we're only just getting to the point now where you have the budget to actually put some of that stuff on the screen.
Right. It's funny, two other names come to mind. Michael Caine, like in the 80s, was like literally in every movie. And then it's kind of another running joke on this show that Eric Roberts is literally in every movie. But that one's actually grounded in some truth. And it's one of the jokes that I will ask people is, you know, before your career is over, how many movies will you have starred in with acting great Eric Roberts? The reason for that joke about it is, I mean, he's a great actor. I love him. But literally between 2013 and 2014, he was signed to 84 movies and television shows in 1 year. I mean, 1 year, 84. That's just absurd.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive, right? I mean, that's great, right? I mean, you're out there, you're working, you're getting the money, you know, that sort
yeah.
of thing. I mean, it's that Danny Trejo, right? I mean, he's in tons of movies, you know, he always delivers. You know what you're getting, and it's usually pretty good fun.
Right, exactly. So, and just to kill off the Judge Dredd topic too, and actually, this is going to be a topic next week because we've got a modern day composer coming on as our guest, Thomas Schoenberger. But I was talking to him when we were kind of setting up the show that really the only type of modern-day composing you get is in film scores. And ironically enough, one of the film scores that I own the soundtrack to is the original Judge Dredd. It's actually, the musically, was an excellent film.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to check that out. That's interesting. I mean, it. You're right, though, right? I mean, like, you know, there's movie scores, and there's also, honestly, video game scores have gotten really, really good. There's a video game out there called Strike Suit Zero, and the guy who did the soundtrack for that is a guy named Paul Ruske. He actually did the Homeworld soundtracks, and it's an amazing soundtrack. It's just absolutely amazing, and it creates these whole aural soundscapes that, frankly, are a lot of fun to write to. It's definitely something I would encourage folks to check out, Paul Ruske's Strike Suit Zero soundtrack.
I know the Dredd one. Are you familiar? I don't know how well you know classical music. Some people get to know the reference or not, but if you've heard of Gustav Holst, he did the planets, and it was just a different, you know, Venus had its own piece, and Uranus had its own piece. The song that he did for Mars was very, you know, Roman warrior sounding, impending doom, here come the soldiers marching kind of thing. That's what the song was like. And the Judge Dredd soundtrack was very similar to the Mars song from his Planet series. So I don't know.
That's interesting. You know, I don't know classical music too well, though I have heard of that that series. I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, the God of War and, you know, that movie was very much about, like, the epic clash of the Titans and, you know, the forces of justice. It honestly, a lot of that had a big influence on me with the Autumn Rain trilogy, in that, you know, the judge system is something that they found that the Republic didn't work. They found that the Republic wasn't compatible with keeping order on the streets in the same way that, you know, I worry personally that the next wave of terrorism that will hit us across the next 10 to 20 years, you know, that given the choice between safety and liberty, I mean, it's like Franklin said, right? I mean, he who chooses safety over liberty deserves neither, and I worry that's the direction we're going in. But that certainly had the Mega City 1 aspect of that, the Constitution appearing in the rearview mirror, that had a big influence on me in terms of, you know, again, it was how Brits are perceiving America, but in some ways, perhaps, you know, not without a grain of truth.
Right, right. Well, anyway, all right. Let's. We're running over here a little bit, which is good. I mean, the first half of the show was really boring for a lot of the listeners because all I was doing was playing old comedy bits and music.
Wow,
to try and
it's always entertaining. It's always entertaining. Where, by the way, John, where are you? The thunderstorm is going on. You're on the East Coast, right?
Well, more or less, yeah. I'm like on the westernmost part of the East Coast time zone, but I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
I just used to live in Washington D.C. and I just remember every evening you get these tremendous thunderstorms. I mean, just like the wrath of God coming down your heads, and you kind of miss that in Los Angeles. And we get perfect weather, but I do miss the thunderstorms every once in a while.
Right. Well, now you did have Sharknado though.
We got Sharknado. Yeah, you always have. We'll always have Sharknado, huh? I mean, that and earthquakes, and you know, your life is complete at that point.
Exactly. So anyway, all right. It's time to do your lightning round, which I warned you about off the air, and I'm going to play some theme music for it here. And while the theme music plays, I need you to kind of get in that mental state, like you're going to be one of those guys that chops the board in half with a karate chop. That's the mental state you need to be in as we enter the lightning round. All right. All right. Here we go.
I'm on it. I'm on
here
it.
Here we go.
The lightning round.
See, you're pretty pumped up now, aren't you?
I'm more ready than you can even say. I'm looking for one of my cats right now. So go for it.
All right. Here we go. I'm gonna give you a softball. Who? And I'm going to. I will sometimes buzz you for incorrect answers or cheer you for correct answers. Just so you're aware. All right. Question number one. Who are your favorite superheroes or comic book characters, male and female?
I would say, honestly, Superman and Aquaman. I'm going to go with Aquaman on this.
Aquaman would be your number one choice as your favorite superhero.
You know, it's really unfashionable to say, but, you know, as a kid, I always had to pick last when it came to which superhero we were going to be, and I always end up being Aquaman. So this is Aquaman's time to shine, as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of gold in that character, and... you know, I think the guy deserves a break. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Aquaman.
I got to tell you, Aquaman is, like, out of the infinite universe of all the superhero choices you could make, is the only incorrect answer. But you actually justified it. So I'm going to end up hearing you for that. Who is your favorite female superhero?
Oh, I'd go with Wonder Woman, like we were talking about her earlier. I mean, you know, it's hard not to like Wonder Woman. Although, you know, Catwoman sort of gives her a run for the money. So I'm going with Wonder Woman here.
Okay, those are very correct answers. Now, I will say this.
I didn't get the cheer for Aquaman, though, did I? I wonder why.
Well, here, let me just do it. There's your buzz for Aquaman.
All right. I'm used to it, man.
I will say that I would have given you 10 bonus points if you would have said Supergirl, because that's my favorite one. So that's all I'm just going to say.
Oh, yeah. No, Crisis on Infinite Earth, that was a harsh death to deal with.
Yes, it was. I think I cried for about 3 days after that. All right.
We all...
Question number two. If you could choose only one perk to watching movies at home, which one is more important to you, a large screen or having 5.1 surround sound?
You know, I'm going to go with the surround sound.
I think I agree with you, so I'm going to give you the chair.
You know, I spent a lot of time on airplanes, and, you know, you're just staring at your laptop at that point. So I'm cool with dealing with smaller screens. You know, I'm sufficiently comfortable in my own masculinity that I'm cool with smaller screens, but it's got to be good sound. It has to be crisp sound. That's essential.
Yep, I'm with you on that too, because I've Netflix streaming on my computer, like after about the first 10 seconds, you forget whether you're watching it on a big screen or on a tiny screen. So yeah, that was kind of my thinking too on that one. Good
as long
answer.
As it's an immersive experience, yeah.
Yep. All right, question number three. If we could enter an alternate universe where there is a continuum not unlike the Oa continuum in Green Lantern, if we could enter an alternate universe where there's a continuum run by sci-fi geeks, on election day, would that continuum of sci-fi geeks indeed name Patrick Stewart as their king?
No, I think they name him as the God Emperor. Actually, I certainly some sort of autocratic figure, but I think king just isn't good enough here, man. I think we got to go with God Emperor.
Curiously enough, David J. Williams, God Emperor was the exact answer we were looking for.
I know, funny how that works.
Yeah. I am going to cheer you for that one. All right, now question number three, or I'm sorry, number four. Not unlike Superman appearing somewhere in every episode of Seinfeld, would you consider, as a result of this interview, in not only making sure this inclusion gets inserted on future projects, but also in going back and rewriting everything you've ever written to ensure that Supergirl appears somewhere in all of your works?
Yeah, well, I've been working on this whole time machine into the past for a while now, and I have a number of things I want to do when I get that time machine working. I mean, right now I've only figured out a way to go into the future at one second a second. But yeah, I'll put Supergirl in all those passwords. Absolutely. I also want to buy up a bunch of internet domain names in 1990. I have some plans in that regard. I think they might be worth some money. And a few other agenda items we can maybe talk about offline. But, yeah, absolutely.
That would be something like Florida Marlins or MiamiMarlins.com. That would be something you would want to order because it would predate them actually being a Major League Baseball team. That would be something that I could see.
Yeah, you just go back. I mean, water.com, air.com, this stuff is all war. I mean, in some ways it was the greatest one-time gold rush in history. It's just no one knew it was going on. It's just amazing. That's actually kind of fun. If you go online, you look at like what were the first 10 domain names to be registered, and like half of them no one ever did much with at all. They haven't done anything subsequently.
Right. Well, you got to figure Playboy and Penthouse.com were a couple of the first ones, because you got to figure like as soon as people like understood the internet, you know, 90% of them were going, ooh, is there porn?
Well, exactly. But it's also, there was also, as I understand, you know, the trademark question, right? So, I mean, if you registered Coke.com, Coke's lawyers would force you off of that and you wouldn't get anything for that. I don't know whether that would be the status of Playboy. But, yeah, there's a million porn URLs that you can just kind of come up with that people are still, I mean, it's like that line from Die Hard when he says, you know, and at the end of this, we'll all be on a beach making 20%. You got people on beaches making 20% off of just those domain names, and some very profitable businesses, as it turns out.
Unbelievable. All right, well, question number five, kind of back to comic books here. From the Archie comics, which are, ironically, I didn't even learn this till after the show started, very much in the news today because I guess Archie is going to be getting killed off in the Archie comics.
Yeah, I heard about that. I don't know anything more about that, but I did read that, in fact, he's – I don't know if he's going to die of a heart attack or they're going to do a drive-by hit on him or what the actual story is. But, yeah, he apparently is not long for this world. Sorry, you had a question. Apologies.
Yeah, I think he takes a bullet defending, like, the first gay character in Archie comics or something, is from what I understood. But this has been question number five on the lightning round for, like, over a year now. And the question is, Betty or Veronica?
Yeah, I'd go with Betty there. It's a tough one, but I like Betty. I like Betty. Veronica was just a little too intense for me. Which isn't to say I don't like intense women, but Betty was sort of the one that, for whatever reason, did it to me when I was reading those comics back in the day.
Gotcha. Well, unfortunately, I have to.
I can take a tough message. It's okay.
We always take the spoiled, ravenous-haired, you know, black-haired girl over the blonde goody-goody every time. So that, unfortunately, I can't give you any leeway.
I can't fault you on your logic there, man. I can't fault you.
Right. All right, question number six. If E.T. were to phone home in today's day and age, would he use a smartphone or Skype?
You know, I would hope he would. I think a smartphone's a little bit more reliable than Skype. So I think particularly now that Microsoft owns Skype, I think he probably would go with that smartphone.
Right, and then with his really, really, really long finger, he would probably enjoy, you know, moving the pictures and the icons back and forth on the smartphone, too. So I am going to have to cheer you for that.
Yeah, unless that those long digits made it impossible for him to actually manipulate the screen, or, you know, he ended up, like, you know, buried in a landfill with a million ET cartridges or whatever the story was. I don't know, yeah, he might go with a smartphone.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer. All right, question number 7. We call this your James Lipton moment, so we ask a very existential-type question for you here. Your James Lipton moment, your question is, are Transformers truly more than meets the eye?
Yeah, I think they are, actually. There was a whole book written on essays by various academics on the philosophy around Transformers. And, you know, you're talking about sentient robots. And so you immediately, on one level, you've got, you know, giant robots with plasma guns the size of freight trains flying, you know, flinging bolts of plasma at each other. But on the other level, you do get to some interesting questions about consciousness and what it means to be sentient, and what it really means to have, you know, even a destiny beyond your own solar system. So, yeah, I've always agreed with it. It is more than meets the eye.
I think you are correct, sir.
All right.
And actually, I'm going to give you a bonus question here. Transformers. With Megan Fox or without Megan Fox?
Oh, that's a good one, actually. That's a good one. I'm into Megan Fox. It's not to say, I mean, look, here's the thing, is that we had to write Transformers Retribution involving no human characters at all. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm okay leaving Spike Wiki behind, but Megan Fox, you know, that was always fun. That was always a fun character to have in those movies. Really just amazing acting, just tremendous thespian skills. Really, I mean, you know. I love this Cheer soundtrack, by the way. It reminds me of that that Gwar song. I don't know if you're listening to Gwar, but Slaughterama. They had, like, cheering throughout it, and it was actually pretty fun.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, that's our phony studio audience there cheering and cheering and buzzing. So, and you know what? Like, a lot of people will kind of poke fun at Megan Fox's acting. But the funny thing is, like, when she is playing a role that is congruent with kind of who she is, she's actually very good. But
mm-hmm.
anything outside of that very small, narrow path, she's, you know, I kind of get the tongue-in-cheekness that she's maybe not that great of a thespian, but when you get her in her niche, she's actually pretty darn good at it.
I think it's a good point, right? I mean, it's like you can be, there's a difference between being a great actor and having limited what your range is. You have some very good actors out there who have just very limited range. You don't put them outside their zone.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of it. The one where she turns into the vampire or whatever, Jennifer's Body. She was really good in that because it suited her. You know, Schwarzenegger was great in the Terminator.
I thought Jennifer's Body got, I think it was roadkill at the box office, but I liked it. I thought the script, the Diablo Cody script, was great, and you know, I think it just hit at a point of market saturation. But that was a good movie.
Yeah, well, and it was a dark comedy, too, and a lot of people were expecting a genuine horror movie. And so I remember a lot of things I read, like, oh, this movie wasn't even scary at all. It wasn't supposed to be. It was supposed to be a black comedy, you know. So,
yeah, it was hilarious. I mean, it was. I mean, you're talking about Diablo Cody, so of course there's going to be some comedic overtones to it, inevitably. But, you know, hey, we'll always have that movie. It remains a good movie despite what the haters may say.
Exactly. So, all right, question number 8. This is where we play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So I'm going to hit the theme music for that.
Dun dun dun. sounds authentic enough.
Right, and of course I have to do this in the voice of Regis Philbin, so bear with me. Here we go. All right. David J. Williams, for $100, which of the following was not a cartoon cat character? Not a cartoon cat. A,
okay.
Sylvester. B, Tom. C, Scratchy. D, Queen Goya.
I'm pretty sure that's the latter, is it not? Queen, I'm going to go with D.
You are correct, sir. Nice work,
Steve,
on that.
Stephen Palmer would never let me hear the end of it if I got that one wrong.
Well, I think he's listening, so that's why I made sure that we threw in the reference for the gay-ass wolf man that is Stephen Palmer.
And what a wolf man. I mean, that is it's a tremendous role.
Absolutely, absolutely. Definitely one of, if not the best guest we've ever had on this show, by the way. All right, question number 9. What is the worst Indiana Jones movie? Temple of Doom, Last Crusade, or Crystal Skull?
You know, I'm going to go with Crystal Skull on this. I mean, Last Crusade, I think, is fantastic. And Temple of Doom has some good moments to it. Crystal Skull, I thought they just kind of jumped the shark. So I'm going with number 4 on this.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. I'm going to do a quick cheer.
You had to think about that for a sec, but I think it's true.
Yeah, I think so, too. Although the fight scene on, like, the railroad car thingy that you both people push each side of it to make it go, that was pretty intense. I like that. But the rest of it was a little... it was a little sketchy. So, yeah. Although I was never a fan of Temple of Doom. However, when I went back and watched it with Short Round and all that, it was actually better than I gave it credit for when I watched it as a kid in the 80s. So, yeah, I'm gonna agree with you.
It holds up. I mean, I think part of the problem was we had never seen anything like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, we had in terms of the old... you know, standbys, you know, from the matinees of the 40s and 50s, but we'd never seen that. We never knew those, it drew on those roots. And so it blew our minds. I mean, it just was, it was one of a kind in the same way that Star Wars was. And so how do you follow that up? I mean, it was tough. It was, in some ways, the surprise is how good 3 ended up being.
Right. Now, that one, I would, you know, if you had said number 3, I would have kind of seen your point with that one, too, because some of the dialogue between him and Sean Connery got maybe a little bit too campy at times, too. So, you know, I think if you add up all the bad moments of all 3 films, I think Crystal Skull probably had more bad moments. So
had more bad moments. But you know what's interesting, though, is I only realized this the other day, is that, so... you know, as you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark was the product of, you know, extensive brainstorming sessions between Spielberg and Lucas, with Lawrence Kasdan essentially, you know, acting as a scribe, you know, and ultimately writing a really good script from that. But the actual brainstorming sessions, a transcript of that is online. It's, you know, for hundreds of pages. It's just... literally the original brainstorming sessions where they've got a tape recorder and they're sitting at what was presumably quite an expensive house because, you know, Star Wars and Jaws and all that had already gone down by that point, and sitting by the pool, and they're brainstorming. And it's amazing watching, whether or not you're involved in the creative process, whether or not you're an artist, even if you're just a fan, it's amazing to watch this, to read it, rather, and literally see them thinking it up and going around in circles. And it's like, hey, we got a name for it. You know, we got a guy, he's going to have a whip and a hat, and I've got a name. It's going to be Indiana Smith. And then they think about it. And like, what about, I mean, and they go on about, I mean, you know, the whole thing about this giant rock rolling in front and crushing everybody. I mean, half those really cool scenes are right in there in the original brainstorming. And it's fascinating to read. It's an amazing document, one of a kind.
Did you ever see the documentary? I know it was like Netflix just kind of threw a whole bunch of documentaries up at one time, and one of them was on the one or two men that Indiana Jones was basically based off of, and I would never remember their names, but I'm just wondering if you've seen that too, because it was probably right along the same lines of interestingness.
I didn't see that. No, I'll have to check that out, because I mean there were a lot of those swashbuckling adventure types, particularly between the wars, between World War One and World War Two, that just were out there. I mean, I've read some fantastic stuff about British espionage in the Soviet Union immediately after World War One, in the Caspian, in the Caucasus areas, and you have this, there was this guy, I don't know if he was one of the guys mentioned in the Netflix video, probably not, because he wasn't an archaeologist, he was a special agent for Britain named, I forget the first name, Bailey was the last name, and they show a photo of him, and he looks like a Russian Cossack officer. And you're like, wow, what the hell? This is a Russian Soviet officer. And no, it turns out it was a British officer impersonating the Russians. And they, very much Lawrence of Arabia types, but, existing well into the 20s and 30s. So I'll have to go check that out, because that sounds pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah, and they actually had another one, too, on who James Bond was fashioned after, too. And so, based on what you just said, you might enjoy watching those back-to-back,
Bond is fascinating, and and you look at, what Fleming was doing in real life in World War II, the spies he knew, looking back on, Sidney Reilly and the first generation of MI6. The reality, of course, I have to look up the documentary because it sounds fascinating, but, the reality, of course, is these were very real, very flawed human beings, and, the Bond that we, that's in some ways why I found Casino Royale so interesting, the new one, because they show Bond as a deeply flawed human being, where it's like, wow, that's an interesting notion.
That
is very much the idealized, British gentleman spy. Now where they get the supervillains from, I don't know. Those guys are great, too.
Right. Well, I think that was just because they wanted to get Donald Pleasance and Max von Sydow in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, it was sort of the updated Fu Manchu kind of arch nemesis aspect. And I mean, some of them were fantastic. I mean, and daring, too. I mean, the way Blofeld, by the way, is described in Thunderball is just amazing. I mean, they're running along. I mean, Fleming's like motoring along with Bond's POV, and now all of a sudden we're in the boardroom in Spectre, the spy organization, and that's where the original. It's become so cliched now, but this was literally the one where like Blofeld fries a guy in the chair for doing the wrong thing in the wrong way, or not being a good enough arch criminal, or whatever. Oh no, I don't remember what it was. They kidnap the daughter of a Corsican casino owner and tampered with her sexually, the guy who Blofeld was punishing. And so Blofeld was punishing him for that. That's why he killed him.
Wow.
Because, the Spectre adhered to its word and et cetera, et cetera. But it just comes out of nowhere. You're like, what the hell is this? When you're reading it. And it kind of keeps going. And it was such an interesting, sophisticated mythology that no one had seen anything like that in the 60s. And when it got turned into film, it just got bigger and better and crazier.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one could argue that the most interesting man alive, if he were a real person, could have arguably been Ian Fleming. I mean, just all the stuff that he was into and whatnot.
There is a bit of that going on, right? I mean, when you look at those ads for the most interesting man alive and that sort of thing, I mean, right. Ian Fleming was, he really went through a lot of that, in World War II. I mean, he knew those guys, he was one of them in a certain sense. And it's just a shame with Ian Fleming that, he barely lived long enough to enjoy the success. I mean, he enjoyed the success of the books, obviously, but
right.
When the money from the movies started to pour in, it was just apparently ungodly, and he was, you know, pretty much drinking himself to death in the Bahamas at that point.
Right.
He was brilliant. I mean, those books get a lot of there's a subtext to those books that's hilarious. I mean, in Thunderball, I remember there's a conversation where Felix Leiter's come in and have a conversation with Bond where they're talking about, you know, well, look, people in real life don't steal warheads and, you know, hold the world to blackmail. This is like, you know, no one would believe this if you wrote this all down. This is, Leiter literally says, this would be like some crazy mescaline adventure. And they keep going. They keep talking. They just keep the plot rolling at that point. But yeah, Fleming was a fast guy, and, you know, obviously he was more interested in good games of cards and very, very good at it as well, as it showed in the books.
Right. All right, we got three more to get through here. Question number 10, we'll just stick with movies here. Does the movie Prometheus make any sense at all?
Well, I'm going to go with the fact that it does, and in fact, I'm on record as claiming that it does. I wrote an essay for IO9, the sci-fi blog, in which I outlined my theories of the movie. Do I think it was a flawed movie? Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that there were some things that they didn't need to do to themselves, like, you know, taking off the helmets and having this well-trained crew behave like the chips were down and that sort of thing. But the mythology of the movie, absolutely, I think, makes sense. I think there was a lot going on, and Ridley Scott was showing us only a small portion of that, and it'll be interesting to see what he does if they go ahead with Prometheus 2.
Right. Well, I am going to cheer you for that. And
yeah.
How ironic that you actually have already written something about why Prometheus makes sense, and we would have that question for you. How does that happen?
Ironic, indeed. It's almost like someone either did their homework really carefully or built a time machine, went back in time, and was able to influence the plot of Prometheus such that I could write an essay on it. Clearly, that's Occam's razor for you right there.
Right. It's obviously one of those two things, and it's probably the latter. That's all I'm going to say.
I just thought it was a brilliant movie, that there was a lot going on in it. It was almost Kubrickian in its intensity and its scope and its scale, you know, where, you know, what are they telling us here? You know, that what are they saying with the character of David, this, you know, robot who is created by a man who wants to live forever, and, you know, we're talking about the engineers, this race that looks pretty damn engineered themselves when you get down to it. So there's hints of this other race in the progenitors in the background here, and we're talking here about the text saying that, you know, I forget if it's a king's subjects overthrow him or a son outliving his father. There's some sort of primal dialogue in there where you're like, okay, Scott had a larger agenda going on. It's the same way that, you know, you can look at 2001 or AI, artificial intelligence, and think, okay, there's more going on here than meets the eye. And, you know, you could watch it for 2 hours and then come out of it and say, what the hell was going on there? That was ridiculous. Or you can give it a second look, a more in-depth look, and realize this is a master filmmaker saying some very important and intense things. So
right,
that's the camp I fall into on Prometheus. And they could have just done an alien reboot, right? They could have just had like a big bug hunt. And instead, they went for something a little more subtle and a little more deep.
Well, it's interesting you said that, you know, Kubrickian, because literally you just described every single Stanley Kubrick movie ever. That's a very, very good reference to that.
I've been watching artificial intelligence recently, AI again, and it's a fascinating movie. I mean, people, the haters out there will say, all this schmaltzy stuff, you know, and you know, that's what they get for letting Spielberg into the room and blah, blah, blah. I mean, first of all, Spielberg is a master filmmaker. I mean, just, you know, absolutely the pinnacle. And secondly, a lot of that stuff, you know, the ending and all that sort of thing, I mean, that was all in the original agenda that Kubrick put together with Ian Watson, with British sci-fi writer Ian Watson. And there's a fascinating memoir online where Ian Watson talks about what it was like to, you know, work with Stanley Kubrick on AI. That I'm just, you know, for him it was like a surreal comedy, you know, being with Kubrick every day and brainstorming this movie. But I'm just kind of going down the rabbit hole with that right now. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Let's see. Question number 11 here. This is a very simple one. Well, who is the sexiest woman alive?
Ooh, that's a good one, actually. Yeah. That's actually a really good one. I'd have to think about that for a few moments. If you'd asked me that in 2010, I might have said Ellen Page. I think, you know, I couldn't take my eyes off her in Inception. Right now, I'll probably say my girlfriend. Leave it at that.
that actually is, if you do have a significant other, that is really the only correct answer. So
it is the correct answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Glad the audience approved.
That is so awesome that you said Ellen Page, because I find her insanely attractive too. And there again, you have your Diablo Cody reference.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, no, I mean, look what she, what she did in Juno was great. And then, Christopher Nolan has a very smart instinct for this kind of thing, right? He knows, you know, I mean, talk about, you know, I mean, Wayne Gretzky saying, you know, you got to skate to where the puck's going to be. I mean, talk about ability to skate to where the puck's going to be in terms of the zeitgeist. I mean, he goes and casts Matthew McConaughey as the lead in Interstellar way before the McConaissance ever occurred. Now he's looking like an absolute genius. And I think it was the same kind of brilliance of casting that he was doing with Ellen Page. I mean, the chemistry, apparently DiCaprio was just, as an actor, just in love with her. Apparently he just thought she was amazing. And you can see the chemistry between them. And, I love that bit, the bit where he's like, who is it? I forget who the guy in Looper, starred in Looper, who's I'm blanking on national radio right now, which is tremendously. Oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt says, you know, well, maybe you've noticed by now just how much Cobb spends doing things that he tells other people not to do. I thought that was great. It's just a brilliant, brilliant movie.
Yeah. She's not anybody that you would like. You know, she's not going to be walking down any runway models anytime soon. But yeah, she's got a quality that I think she's insanely sexy. So I think those are both very good answers. So, all right, The last question: which of the following would be a bigger faux pas for a guy to do on a first dinner date at a nice restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
A, ask, do you have root beer when the waiter gets the drink order? Or ask, can I have a doggy bag when dinner is over? Which do you think would spell failure for the guy more than the other?
Oh, I think they're both great moves. Either one will get you laid. I think clearly I'll go with the doggy bag, actually. I think that's probably the worst faux pas. I'll go with the doggy bag.
All right. There is really no incorrect answer on that one.
they're both lethal, aren't they? I mean, they're only employed by absolutely adroit, counterintuitive pickup artists who just absolutely are doing the Jedi mind trick and people who aren't going to get laid. I mean, it's those two categories, and that's about it, I think.
We used to have a third option, but everybody took that one. It was C, use a coupon. But, you know, that was worse. But,
she might admire you for your thriftiness. You know, you never know. Stranger things have happened.
Well, honestly, you know, that's the answer a lot of people give on the doggy bag one. They'd be like, oh, if he's taking it home to puppy, that's cute. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. A guy on a first date, he wants to come off like money is no object, like he's a czar and a kaiser and Mr. Confident. By God, bring me some more food, like a Hercules movie. If he's carrying home a little doggy bag of his leftovers, he's going to look like an idiot. You know, and it's kind of
I have to say, though, I mean, just as long as we're talking about first dates and dinner, I was always of the school of thought that dinner on first date is just a bad move anyway, because it just allows you more chances to make mistakes. You know, it's just a matter. I mean, it's just go for coffee, go for drinks, you know, that sort of thing. But dinner, you got more opportunities to make mistakes, especially if pasta's on the menu. That can only go wrong. But your more confident viewers may disagree. I certainly think, though, doggy bags probably a bad idea. You know, let's leave those doggy bags back in the kitchen.
Right. Well, and the reason I throw the root beer one in there is because I actually have a friend of mine, and if we're going to Burger King or whatever and he gets a root beer, that's fine. But, like, if we go out to a nice place to eat and then the first question is, do you have root beer? And then inevitably, are there free refills? I kind of want to crawl under the table at that point, you know?
Are there free refills? Can I start with the refill? You know, that sort of thing. It kind of only goes downhill at that point, you know? I mean, but, you know, dinner dates are tough, though. I mean, I'll give you an example. Actually, it wasn't a date. It was just an example of what can go wrong while you're at dinner. When I used to be back in corporate America, and so I'm a refugee from corporate America, that's why I turned to writing science fiction. But I remember I'd just been promoted to something or other, and the boss took me out to lunch. And this was back when, you know, we all wore ties. And I'm kind of giving away the punchline, but, you know, at one point I'm, you know, trying to be all suave and whatever, and, like, I think, oh, there's something on my mouth, so I, you know, wipe my mouth with my napkin. No, I wipe my mouth with my tie, and that right in front of my boss. You know, it's like, so I mean, this is what I, you know, not all of your viewers, listeners are as clumsy as I am, but that's what I mean when dinner is just one more opportunity to make not just mistakes, but epic mistakes, you know, epic
right.
mistakes that will end up in comedy channels on YouTube, and you don't need that for first dates. You know, save those epic mistakes for the second or the third date, and minimize your chances of that on the first date. That's my philosophy, at any rate.
It's like a game of darts. You want your opponent to have as few throws as possible, because the more throws, the more chances you have of hitting a bullseye. So yeah, that's a very good way of putting it.
A little bit, right? I mean, there is a bit of that going on. Now, that said, I mean, you know, asking for root beer, I mean, why not? It's asking, you know, do you have root beer? I think the problem comes in. But, you know, hey, I mean, sure, I'll have a root beer. I mean, why not? Like, you know, just as long as you look decisive on it, I suppose. You know, and there are parts of the country where, you know, root beer is practically religion. I was reading about the other day, there was some soda that was up in Maine. I'm not going to remember this, but it was a Maine-based soda that's still popular in Maine that used to compete nationally with Coca-Cola, and it's entered the lexicon in several catchphrases. And I, unfortunately, this is all wrecked because I can't remember what the name of the soda is or was. But, you know, I mean, the market changes, you know, and root beer. I mean, hey, you know, I mean that's an authentic drink in many places.
Right. It wasn't RC Cola, was it? Royal Crown Cola?
No, it wasn't RC. There was some sort of phrase which, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll look it up subsequently and I'll email it to you, and if it's interesting, then mention it next week, and if it's completely boring and tedious, then just don't mention it. And
gotcha.
Oh, I remember it now. I'm down with it now. It's Moxie.
Oh, okay. I think I have actually heard of that.
When you say when the phrase, I looked it up on my iPhone. I was cheating. Sorry, but the phrase, you know, when someone's got moxie, you know, they've got brass balls or whatever the phrase actually means. You know, they got audaciousness. That's a reference to the soda Moxie that in the 1920s and 30s was nationwide and was sold at ball games. You know, so that's where that actually comes from. Got moxie.
I did not know that. That's wow. That is.
I know. I didn't know it either. It's crazy. You know, not got milk, got moxie. Go figure. You know that there's a actual story behind all that.
Yeah, I'll be damned. That is really interesting. So, all right, sir. Well, I think we went about an hour over, believe it or not, which is great because that means this was a really good interview and very interesting talking. But I think now's the time where we let people, where you give them your plugs, let them know where you can buy your books, let them know where they can follow you on Facebook, Twitter. Take a minute, 2 minutes, whatever you need. Hit some plugs, and we'll get you out of here.
Sure. Well, I really don't need much, but I really appreciate it. The website is autumnrain2110.com. So that's autumnrain2110, 2110, in other words. The books take place in the year 2110. Autumnrain2110.com. I'm also on Twitter at Dave Williams, at David J. Williams, and author of the Autumn Rain trilogy and the recently published Star Wars short story Blade Squadron and Transformers Retribution. And Johnny, look, I really appreciate you having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for me too. And would those be your most how do I put this? The upcoming projects closest to now that are coming up, the Transformers and the Star Wars stuff that people can look forward to, or do you have anything else upcoming that people should look out for?
Those are the published works. Yeah, the Transformers novel that came out this past March is the most recent novel. I have a couple of, as I said, I'm currently lead writer on the Homeworld prequel, so that'll
right.
be hopefully coming out soon. And I have a couple of secret projects in the works that I'll hopefully be able to share with you in forthcoming conversations.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, I'll tell you what, and this is kind of, you know, I extend this offer to everybody I like. Anytime you want to come on the show and plug something like that, when it's no longer a secret and you're allowed to reveal it to the public, if you want to come on and talk about it, just give me a heads up and we'll make it happen. All right.
That sounds great, Johnny. Listen, I really thanks to Stephen Palmer for getting the two of us together, and really appreciate your time here. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, same thing. And he just tagged both of us on Facebook about something, Mission Log, discovered documents for Roddenberry Entertainment or something. So I'm sure we'll both have to read that once the show's over. So, all right, folks.
Have to go check it out.
Absolutely. That's going to wrap it up, folks, for David J. Williams. And when we come back after the commercial break, I'm going to go ahead and play some geek news, and then we'll get you guys out of here, too. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
Gentlemen, guess what? I'm back. This is Hit List Radio. It's going to be all adult entertainment. And a lot of people, you know what, say that I'm consumed with myself. Well, the right way we met was actually through your wife. I was hitting on her online. Matter of fact, if I got a radio show, I was a damn deal. When I look at a chick, I got to look at everything, and I have to give every part of her anatomy an award. But I am glad to be back, and I am glad that I'm on show, and I am glad that Jared ain't here.
Friday nights, 10 p.m. on SmartRockRadio.com.
So, Ricky, how about that soundbite, man?
Oh, you're terrible. And your show is terrible. If it weren't for Geek Goddess Shacky, I'd have already downloaded it, put it on a floppy, just so I could wipe my ass with it.
Well, that's really...
Oh, what? You hear that noise? That's you. You just told a joke. And what's that? What's that? Is that applause? No. Oh, is that laughter? No, that's a pin dropping. Your audience hates you.
I think.
I hate you.
That's not really.
You are not smart. You're stupid asses. You should be called stupid asses. Well, you're leaving. Rude.
Hey, player, is you tired of blinging your gear, flashing your squiller, and cruising around for dimes in your whip with no bass? Don't hate the player, my Nichols. Hate the game.
I'm loving how it's going in the Akron scene, cause I'm rolling with the dudes and they act as mean. Always come around here when they asking me, I cause catastrophes the way it has to be. This is Tony Sin, man, yeah, and this is Soundstrew. West on the beat, yo, it's like we bringing sound, dude. I ain't never slowing down, it's not loud, dude. Haters in the dark trying to hide, but so you wanna hear the bomb stuff? Sick of the videos. Middle finger up and stay rapping for my city, yo. Tune to the hip-hop stop, it's the bomb. Ain't you heard? SmartMarkRadio.com. So you wanna hear the bomb stuff? Sick of the videos. Middle finger up and stay rapping for my city, yo. Tune to the hip-hop stop, it's the bomb. Ain't you heard? SmartMarkRadio.com.
Wednesday nights at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on SmartMarkRadio.com.
I always know I can count on you, mighty Hercules.
You only had one sandal, Jason, which means you were meant to be king of Ulysses. Why are you laughing?
Hercules! Oh, it's most amusing. Argo said he wanted to pass the time by having a drink while we sail on our quest to find the Golden Fleece. Hmm?
And what's so funny about that?
Well, it's comical, Hercules, because he got drunk on his own wine and passed out. So Castor and Pollux and myself put his hand in hot water so that he would pee himself. Then we all found writing utensils and drew on his face.
By the gods, listen now. Remember what I'm going to say. Never draw on the host.
But Hercules, I don't understand. I thought when someone passed out at their own party, they were considered fair game, hmm?
And who bought you that glass of wine you hold in your hand?
I'm sorry, mighty Hercules. You are right.
Well done, lad. Now you'll grow up to be fine and strong.
I just hope I'm as wise as you are one day, Hercules.
And you will be, my boy, because you have a strong will.
Thanks, Hercules. And right now, I'm going to do what Leardy said we should do all along. And that's blow pepper up his nose and glue a banana to his hand so maybe he won't notice that he pissed himself. See ya.
Bye then.
You know what they say, Hercules. Spare the rod, spoil the child.
He's 35.
Captain, I'm picking up a strange noise from the 21st century.
Oh, do shut up, Mr. Crusher.
Shields up. Red alert.
Relay that, Will. Leslie, it's very hard to take you seriously when you are wearing that wimpy little rainbow suit.
Sorry.
Captain, the boy is right. I'm picking up the Smartass's radio podcast. Oh, good lord. On screen, then.
Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com.
Smartasses Radio.
Call in and talk to the hosts. Dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype. And now, back to Smartass's Radio.
All right, folks, welcome back to Smartasses Radio, and it actually ended up being a good show. I apologize that Nikki Nitro didn't show up, but wow, what a great interview with David J. Williams. Just literally, I mean, you know, we're about to deliver some geek news to you, and so what a great guest to have for a geek-themed show. So anyway, without further ado, we got about 11 minutes left before I get cut off, so I'm just going to go ahead and get right into the
geek news.
Well, first up, Marvel is certainly excited to announce that on Tuesday, July 15th, which would be tomorrow if you're keeping score at home, at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, it's going to be announcing its latest explosive title live on the Emmy-winning daily talk show, The View. And we have no idea why that's happening, but that is what's going to happen. I don't know if it's because Whoopi was on Star Trek The Next Generation. I don't know if it's because Disney owns Marvel and The View and ABC. It all seems a little bit silly to me, but there you go. That it is your
news
for that. So make sure you tune into The View tomorrow and also in other
news.
Archie Comics announced its plan to relaunch its superhero imprint with a new name, Dark Circle Comics. Now, whether or not this ties into the death of Archie or not, we don't know. But the name change signals a new direction for the superhero titles, which will feature a more cinematic, literary, and mature approach to the characters told in accessible stories that will appeal to two new and longtime fans. Previously known as Red Circle Comics, the new imprint will announce a slate of titles in advance of Comic-Con International San Diego later this month. The imprint news broke in USA Today via interview with Dark Circle Comics editor Segura. The story also debuted with imprint's new logo, and again, formerly known as Red Circle, the reboot will now be known as Dark Circle, maybe giving a bit of a horror edge and playing off the massive success of Afterlife Life with Archie, the Zombies in Riverdale epic. And lastly, in
news,
this weekend's stunning supermoon captured the imagination of stargazers and photographers across the globe, but next month's will be bigger and better, astronomers have promised. The moon appeared larger and brighter than usual as its orbit reached its perigee, the closest point to Earth, on its oval-shaped orbit, but it will appear even brighter and larger on August 10th, which happens to be one of our producers' birthdays, and 2 days after my birthday, when the perigee coincides with the hour that the moon is at its most full. Excuse me, a third supermoon will occur on September 9th, although will not be as bright. Supermoons happen on an average of every 13 months and 18 days, so three in a row is very unusual, although there were three in a row last year as well. They bring the moon around 31,000 miles closer to Earth than its farthest point, the apogee. So that's about it. Folks, I want to remind you, if you haven't been to Smartasses Magazine online yet at smartasses.net, we strongly encourage you to do so. Our radio show's archives are there. New articles are being posted all the time. And best of all, even though we eventually have to pull down some of the comedy bits we run on the show in lieu of new ones, you heard a couple tonight in lieu of Nikki Nitro, you can always go to smartasses.net and hear what really amounts to a full comedy album all for free. And, of course, next week right here on Smartasses Radio, we talked about it a little bit earlier, we have modern-day composer Thomas Schoenberger plus the lead singer of the band Oblivia, Ben Kyle. Those are the guests next week on another all-new live episode. And there's not going to be many live episodes this summer, so make sure you tune in. Anyway, with that said, that's going to wrap it up for yet another episode of Smartasses Radio. I am your host, Johnny Hollywood Video, reminding you, if you can't get it anywhere else, get it on video. Bye-bye.